Hello, and welcome to episode 189 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and as always, I'm joined by the creator of the superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
What was that?
Jump the guns.
Jumping the guns. You're a little bit premature then, Dan.
Leave that to the wife.
That's happened before.
Yeah, fine. All good.
And the other voice you can hear is the globe-trotting, sun-soaked Mr. Tony Lothario Esmond.
I've spent most of the holiday in bed. I'd like to get it on tape as well, evidentially, that Vince threatened me just before we came on.
No, I didn't.
You said just wait and see what's going to happen next time.
I have never threatened you in my life, and if you say that again, I'll fucking kill you.
Yeah, see?
Oh, dear. Yes, welcome back to the show, folks. And we've also got another guest. Yeah, so we're going to introduce him straight away. This week, we're very pleased to be joined by an artist who we've seen him go from supplying artwork for some of our crazy schemes like art prints and the awesome games. Do you remember that, gents?
I forgot about that. Fucking
yeah,
hell.
I remember that.
Yeah. And now he has become the full-on artist of the great Level 8 Comics All Ages title, Late Nights. It's our great pleasure to welcome Matt Strott to the show. Hello, sir.
Hello, guys. Thanks for having me on. It's
listen to that American radio voice he's got. We said that he had quite a sexy American voice, didn't we? Yeah. We've said that before.
It's a great voice.
Yeah. Very soothing.
Yeah. What time is it in Baltimore?
That is 2:30. Yep, and I'm in Baltimore. So if you hear gunshots, it's just that I'm in Baltimore.
That's just the wife.
Yeah. Just firing indiscriminately out the window.
I think we were voted America's most dangerous city for like the second year in a row. So
so proud.
Well, yeah, you live there.
Gangster.
Well, it's good to have something to be proud of, isn't it, with your hometown?
Yeah.
Do you know what else worth being proud about?
What's that? Well, being friends with you, Tony.
Yeah, thank you. Who's messaging me? Oh, it's not you. Okay.
Will you stop interrupting the show?
Sorry.
When you're part of it. it's almost like he's trying to ruin our sponsorship ad.
Oh, I love our sponsorship ad. You know,
yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Who are we sponsored by, Dan?
Comic House.
Yeah. Do you know what? I was trying to catch him off. You can't catch Dan Butcher off. He's always on.
You never catch guns.
Yeah.
I can catch him off guard quite easily. Don't worry about that.
No. I do like the fact that your wife has told me and Vince off for sending stuff to your house that says things like guns, McGuns, and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
I had another one turn up the other day, which is like along those lines.
Yeah.
Said, I hope all these people don't know where we live. And so, oh, they kind of do because all the stuff's coming in.
Oh dear, we won't ask what you got in the post, but never mind the post.
Gun delivery for guns.
Anyway, that's got nothing to do with our lovely sponsors, Comic House. Yes, Comic House are the indie comic marketplace with a difference, and they're great guys, and they put up with these ads every week. So you know that says a lot about a sponsor, if you ask me. Yes, but. If you go to comichouse.com, there's a huge selection of titles on the website, on the database. Loads of small press creators have listed their books on there. It's another avenue to sell your books, which is brilliant. And if you self-publish, you can list your book on there for free. When you sell a copy, then you take a tiny, tiny, tiny commission, if that, which is amazing, where every penny counts in this small press world. But they've also got an app, which is, you know, we've been talking about it for a while now, but, you know, I think it's starting to blow up now, isn't it? It's starting to...
Yep, getting in, isn't it? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I've been trying to promote it on a forum I occasionally go on to, but...
Unfortunately, what forum is this, Dan?
Pornhub. No, but the Spider Forest creators, but unfortunately, I must have pressed the post button 3 times, so the message popped up 3 times, so it looked like spam.
Oh,
and
the
administrator to ask me, is this you? Or just like, spam? I was like, no. It is me. It's genuine.
Yeah. So, but did they delete two of the posts?
No. So, the duplicate ones they did, but the rest of them starting to generate a bit of people responding to it. So hopefully they will get some new creators putting their stuff on there because the webcomics at Spider Forest are top notch, and I'd love to see them on the app.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. We've had a couple of creators on from Spider Forest, haven't we? And like, it's fantastic stuff on there. But and they definitely need to get their work on Comic House because. Mm. the selection on the app is just getting bigger all the time. There's quite a few. I think I'm seeing more and more sort of collected webcomics and stuff like that sort of begin to start to go on there, I think. And as we all know, it's well worth it because, you know, it's quite rewarding. You know, you do well from it. And they're always...
And it's a good way to promote your Kickstarters. If you're if you've got a new Kickstarter off, people want to know what your books are like, and they can go on there and look at stuff. And if you haven't got those books in print anymore, then why aren't you putting them on there? Because they're a dead product, aren't they?
Yeah.
Stick them on there, create some buzz for your product, and create some revenue.
I mean, how many times have we said, I love this creator, I'm going to go back and discover everything that they've done before?
Yeah, you know? And all the time.
Yeah, Comic Cow's a perfect place to do that. I think I'm going to put on some older stuff on there as well. Now we say it. But they're always adding stuff to there all the time. What have they got at the moment, gents?
We've got a massive title just rolled out on there. Monologue by Stuart J. McCune.
Oh, yeah. It's a great book. Yeah. One of my favourite books, that is. Yeah.
Masks 2 from Dynamite, Future Quake, Ink, The Black Terror, Action, Codename Action from Dynamite, Vampirella, and Army of Darkness. So
if you go far enough back in Future Quake, I think I'm in it, actually. I got a couple of stories in there. They're great guys, you know, that do Future Quake and Dog Breath and all those sort of books, doing sort of 2000 AD stories and sort of twisting the tale stories as well. So I wrote some Strontium Dog for Dog Breath.
Yeah.
Or five or six stories for them.
We need to get them on. We need to get them,
yeah,
them on.
Such good guys as well. Mm. Really, really impressed with how enthusiastic they've been going since the 90s with that. You know, they really have.
Do they actually feature 2000 AD characters? So they're allowed to do that?
Yeah, they're allowed to. Okay. Yeah, and you find that a lot of people they have on in their comic eventually occasionally go and work for the prog. And sometimes it's a bit of crossover, so you might get an artist from the prog doing covers for them and stuff like that, you know. It's a great little book. Yeah, really good.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a nice sort of example of like a fan scene sort of in, you know, working in tandem with like the original sort of IP, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great stuff.
Yeah.
As is Comic House, and as you can see, they've got loads of stuff on there, and it's only growing all the time. I like to give it a week, and then I go back, and there's another 5 titles I need to read to add to the list. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you can have a 14-day free trial, and the subscription is only like £3 a month. Which is nothing really. That's probably the price of one of the lower tiers on a Kickstarter campaign.
It really is, unfortunately, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, that's like a thank you, isn't it? On some Kickstarter tiers.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. Free hug, whatever that shit is.
Yeah. You have to pay for a free hug. Oh, Tony.
Yeah.
I'll hug you if you want.
It's usually saying, like, I would just remember you and say thanks.
Yeah. I'll think about you as I'm tucked up in bed later. That's one of the tears on some of them, isn't it?
Oh, dear.
I was swimming around in my Scrooge McDuck vault. With a girl.
You can't dive into coins, though, can you?
I always found that. And he used to swim in them and blow them out of his mouth as if it was water. I found that a bit unrealistic.
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of forgetting the fact that he's a talking Scottish duck.
But that aside.
If you go to comichouse.com, then you'll find out more about our lovely sponsor. So there you go.
Yeah, that went all right, that one. Less insulting than normally, that one.
Yeah.
And we had a hot take on DuckTales as well.
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't love a hot take on DuckTales?
That's going to get lots of up likes on Reddit, I reckon, that. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. We've got our own subreddit, haven't we? Well,
have we?
Comics for the Apocalypse.
Oh, right, the cool people have been on there, you mean?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm scheduled to go on that podcast now.
Yeah.
Vince is coming up from behind.
Yeah.
That was a low joke, and I feel bad for me.
No, you don't feel bad. If that was the case, why did you do it?
Because I don't know.
I don't feel bad. Cheer me up.
So.
Sorry, Matt. Sorry we're ignoring you.
That's okay. Yeah.
The thing is... I brought Matt on to defend me this week, and look how useful he's been. He said nothing as I've been bullied by my...
Yeah, we've been talking. We've been talking behind your back. We've got plans.
Oh, God.
Late night in shining armour.
Hey.
Before
we get
on
to that...
Before we get on to that, Tony...
I love a bad pun.
Tony has been out and about. Now, obviously, we know he was sunning himself. But you came back and then just got tucked into more comics, didn't you, Tony?
Well, yeah. So I came back and got a new dog. So I've got a new dog now. He's driving me fucking nuts. And then I was sat in a cafe this morning near the Comic Mart, because I went to the Comic Mart today, and thinking, Rachel Lee Carter has just liked my picture of my new dog. And then I looked up and she was standing in front of me, thus proving the world is run by robots and we're all in a fucking simulation, which I've decided again is true. So I had a coffee with Rachel and met a pal who, I'm sorry, I think her name was Lydia, but I can't remember. And then we wandered around the Comic Mart. Now, unfortunately, the reason I wanted to talk about it, because we go to the Comic Mart every few months, don't we? But the, they've combined it. For those who are going to it, they've combined it with a Funko event.
Right.
Yeah.
I was going to ask Matt, after Tony's finished, do they, Funko's a bigger thing in the States?
It's huge. Really? It is huge, yeah. And I was going to ask Tony about the Comics Mart. Is that basically like a hotel where it's lots of long boxes and just pure comics? Okay.
Yeah, it is. They mix it up with a load of bootleg DVDs and stuff like that as well. Gotcha. And sort of movie adaption paperbacks and stuff like that.
Yep.
And the odd sort of crate of toys, but it's nearly all back issue sellers. Yeah.
Yeah. You go and with your checklist and you try to hunt down the comics you're missing. That's my kind of comic.
So convention. The plan is you don't bathe for about a year before you go. so if you can, you really pen and ink.
Yeah. That's entry level.
Yeah. That's amateur level. And you wear something like, you have one of those wheelie trolleys, you know, like old ladies have.
Yep.
You know, and you take one of them. And you probably wear a vest or something similar. And you have a sort of strange, probably spend too much time on Second Life look in your eye. And then you wander around buying back issues. That's generally that's a minority. It used to be the majority, but there's a lot of cool guys. That, you know, it's a good little scene now. And there's a meet up afterwards in the pub, which I occasionally sort of pop along to. But it was a day of actually bumping into people. So Simon Russell met up with him and saw the sort of Ashcan version of his new Kickstarter, which is fucking going good guns, like really good. And I met Thorpe. He was there with his mate Dan. Had a coffee with them. It was nice to see John Bishop. I sort of waved at across a crowded Funko strewn hallway. Yeah, it was all the usual crowd, really. It's good for back issues this time if you manage to fight your way through the smelly Funko people. And there is a difference in the fandom, you can tell. So they all come in with like those huge sort of, they look like really big laundry bags, if you know what I mean. The kind you get at conventions that you special edition toys get given away in.
Yeah.
They all seem to come in with them and then they walk out with like 20 Funkos.
What I don't get about the Funkos is they'll make one out of anything. I saw an ad for a Kentucky Fried Chicken Funko.
Really?
It was Colonel Sanders from Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Some of them are just like a bloke in a suit.
Yep.
Some of them are just that, aren't they? And they look like babies. They look like superheroes or characters who have baby faces.
I'm not going to put down anyone who has one or two that they like of a certain character, but I don't.
Yeah,
really
I've got
get...
one. I've got one sits on my desk. So somebody bought me Lebowski, and I kind of like that. But these people have like walls of them.
Yeah.
It's one of those. I think it'd be like the Beanie Baby thing where.
Yeah, there's going to be a big landfill one year. Like 20 years down the road.
Exactly.
Just gives a shit about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But some of them go for like big money, don't they? Some of them are like limited edition and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, but it's only kind of like the perceived value of them at the moment.
Yeah.
I can't see that kind of increasing.
Like comics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they have recently been having an uptick. There's a big sale, I think, at this weekend. It might have been Chiswick Auctioneers in the UK. They sold off a load of original art and comics. I think I sent you guys, they had the original run of, the whole completed run of 2000 AD.
They did. I'm on a 2000 AD group, and somebody had been in to look at it, I think. And they said some of the early issues were tatty, but it was good reader copies, you know, and it was actually not a bad price for that, you know.
Nice.
Yeah, that's quite cool. Yeah, I don't have a complete run. I'm still missing a few issues, so... The Comic Mart was all right, but fuck me, it did it pen and ink. It was the worst I've ever encountered, and it weren't even the summer. You know what I mean? So, there was a few bargains. I was picking up books for other people as well, doing a bit of that, sort of buying books for other people where they sort of requested. But it's all right. I think we're thinking about going to one soon, aren't we? We're all going to head down to one again.
Every 2 months, aren't they?
They're meant to be, and then sometimes one will just appear and you'll get an extra one. There's a bit of that. It used to be at the first weekend of every month, but now it's been cut back now. So
do any of you guys have a complete run of any comic series? Like when you go to these comic marts, are you trying to get a complete run of something?
Yeah, yeah, I do. I'm trying to buy up all of First comics at the moment. If you remember them, they did Grimjack and Nexus and Badger. So I'm almost there with that. Evangeline is like one of the last few I've got to collect, which I bought one of today.
That's half the fun, is the collection, is the trying to get the complete collection of something. Yeah. Like I'm trying to work on Amazing Spider-Man.
It's fun to go
just to get an issue at a time, you know?
So. Did you see that thing I put out? It's been on Twitter today about the Mexican Amazing Spider-Man.
I was going to bring this up, actually. Have you seen this, Dan?
Yeah, I was kind of blown away by this.
Yeah, so for I took a screenshot of the tweet, actually. David at Comic Keys tweeted this, and it kind of went a bit viral, especially with a lot of creators that didn't know this, or like, you know, retweeting it as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know if any of our listeners knew this, but in the 1970s, publisher La Prensa did not believe Mexicans would read Spider-Man after Gwen Stacy died. They created 45 original issues after Spider-Man 119, where she lives, and that have never been translated or reprinted. And then he posts up an image, and he says, "This is their marriage issue. Marvel needs to collect these."
And the art's like really, really nice from what
it's
I've seen.
It's really good,
It's real Romita Senior stuff, isn't it? It's sort of.
Especially the Spider-Man himself. It's just really nicely drawn, isn't it?
I was dubious this was some kind of sort of prank as well.
Yeah, because even Dan Slott, who knows everything about Spider-Man, wasn't aware these existed. So I was kind of skeptical myself. They might be a Photoshop job.
Someone has posted up more covers from it, and they all look like the same thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, they look legit.
Oh, cool.
They said they had horrible continuity issues, obviously, because they must have stopped. And then suddenly it's all come crashing down. Should have just done it. It's a Dallas thing. Oh, it's a dream.
It's not the first time this happened. I'm a fan of a British character. You probably won't know him, Matt, called Janus or Janus. I'm not sure. Janus, I like to say, because it rhymes with something. But Janus Stark. And he's a sort of escapologist that appeared in a few different British weeklies. And he sort of fell out of favour and no one was really interested. So he stopped being published in England. But France really loved him as a character, and he did like another 40 or 50 issues over there, and they killed him in the series. So he actually, and I bought a couple of the French issues, and they actually kill him in the French book sort of thing as part of the storyline. So it has happened before. The odd thing has happened like that, I think. Mm. Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Well, if it's true, I hope they collect it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. No better time as well. Yeah, I think so. It'd be nice for these Mexican artists to get a few quid for it, you know, if they're still about.
There was a Italian one of Superman, and they kind of, the publishers didn't like the powers, so they kind of stripped them back. It was like a dude running around in the Superman costume, but they had to lose the S as well, so it kind of just lost all meaning.
You got to love these countries that don't have copyright or didn't have copyright laws. Like, I think there was, wasn't there a Turkish Star Trek for a while?
Yeah,
and all this sort of thing. Yeah,
there's a fantastic series on YouTube called it's like Turkish trash cinema, and every episode is like 5-10 minutes long. They look at something they ripped off, and they did Rocky, Rambo. They've done so much stuff. Oh, it's all done like on a budget, and it just seems like a couple of blokes who like drink and smoke heavily and say we can make a few quid out of this. And there's always there's a lot more nudity and violence in them.
They do love a moustache as well in those cinemas. Well, there's a lot of classy moustaches going on.
Classy moustaches.
And slightly off topic, and on a more serious note, just and we're not going to get into the reasons or the reasons why I wear art, but the just like a little hope you're okay going out to previous guest Peter Cimetti.
Yes.
He's had something horrible happen to him, and it's none of our business. And I hope, but we do hope he's okay, because when we had him on, he was. It was a lovely fucking guy. Proper good guy.
Yeah,
and his attitude was something in regards to making comics is something I think everyone should take note of. I think
there was a lot of misconception, because I've spoken to people who kind of we know in our group, and they've got the completely the wrong end of the stick of the whole thing.
Yeah,
and I'm happy to set people straight on what I know about it.
I think it's a real shame. Like, I wouldn't wish that on your worst enemy. What's happened to him?
No,
you know, never mind about. We sent him a little message from the podcast, so hopefully he's all right.
So, as we know, this scene is not exactly a huge scene anyway, even though social media makes it seem like it's the biggest thing in the entire
If social media reflected sales, we'd all be millionaires, wouldn't we? Do you know what I mean?
It's like, we'd be recording this from my yacht. That's what we're
doing. Yeah. And Mike
Matt had flying in his chopper.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. I just want to see that now.
Yeah, sometimes we need perspective. It's just comics.
Let's get perspective here. Matt, Vince did just say he wanted to see your chopper, so let's be careful for the rest of the show.
It's all about perspective. Hang on, that sounds weird. That sounds even worse.
Take the picture at a good angle, Matt. You'll be fine.
Oh, dear. But let's talk about some comics, shall we?
Yes.
Yes, obviously, I'm guessing a lot of our listeners probably already know Matt anyway because of this wonderful community that's built up around this show. I know, obviously, Matt has since joined up with John Late, friend of the show, and a great writer in his own respect. But before we get on to late nights and stuff, Matt was telling us just before we started recording about, you know, the interesting sort of journey he had into where he is now. So it sounds like this is your life, doesn't it, the way I'm describing this?
It does. Yep.
But Matt, tell us a bit about how you sort of like started, you know, getting into comics now, because you wanted to get into newspaper strips, which is something we haven't spoken too much about on this show. So tell us a bit about that.
It's kind of an odd start to be working in comics now from where I was in the beginning. My earliest probably introduction to comics was the actual newspaper. My dad would... Do you guys get the Sunday funnies, or you used to back when the newspaper industry?
We do know of it. Yeah, we do know of it on your side of the river. We didn't. That was like a pullout from the Sunday papers that was just all comic strips, wasn't it? Yeah.
So like during the week, you would get black and white newspaper, and you would have a small page of comics that were black and white. But on the weekend, it was kind of a big deal because the comics would be like multiple pages. They're like 11 inches by 17 inches, the size of the newspaper, and it came on the outside like wrapped up, so it was like a present. Like, it was just magical as a kid that every weekend you get delivered to your house pages and pages of comics. So it was my dad's newspaper, and he enjoyed reading the comics. And my earliest memories were him reading like Beetle Bailey or Blondie or Hagar the Horrible or Garfield. And like, that's really how I got my interest in comics. I wasn't even aware that there were comic books at that point, which was like the 70s. That's how old I am. I'm Tony's age.
I'm sorry about that.
And so really, that's as far as comics were to me. And I didn't know I wanted to be a cartoonist at that point. I just really enjoyed them. And then in the 80s, G.I. Joe came out. And that was the first comic book that I was ever introduced to. A friend of mine got one somewhere else, because there weren't comic shops around where I lived. It wasn't like the internet now, where you knew about comic shops and comics. You lived in the suburbs and you didn't have a comic shop. You didn't even know they existed. You had to go to like a 7-Eleven to get a comic. So he came up by one day with a G.I. Joe comic, and I know the toys. I'm like, wow, there's a comic book. So that was my first introduction to comics themselves. I really, at that point, I didn't have any interest in doing a full-length comic. I was still kind of enjoyed comics, and then kind of put it in the back of my mind, and then went off to college, and I was going to be a mechanical engineer, and I was in the math classes, just like doing math and calculus and stuff, and it's like, I hate this. I don't want to do this the rest of my life, so I decided to go into art. So like the guys on the show, I kind of went into graphic design. Like, I think Vince and Dan are both designers, right?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a creative outlet. And while I was doing that in college, I decided to try my hand at doing comic strips for the college paper. So I came up with a strip for that. And
this is a sort of standard sort of 3-4 panel sort of newspaper style strip, yeah?
Yeah, my first one in that was... four panel, and it was a big eye opener to me that, you know, to draw comics, you actually had to write them first.
Yeah.
So
it's not always the case. Have you seen some of the stuff out there?
So I kind of went and asked backwards. I wanted to draw the comics, but I kind of had to learn how to develop jokes and the rhythm with the four panel strip. And later on, I tried it with the one panel strip, and that's a different dynamic altogether. You know, trying to get the timing of a joke down to one panel versus like a 3 or 4, you got to set up the punchline. And I developed the Last Resort, which is, I think, how you guys first got introduced to my work.
Yes, I remember reading that. Yeah, it was good fun. Yeah.
So they're online at my website, messycomics.com. So I wanted to try to become syndicated, and syndicated was basically how you got into the newspapers. You submit your work to a syndicate, and if they're good enough, then they would take you on, and then they have salespeople that would go around the country to all the newspapers selling your strip. The more newspapers you were in, then the better off you would do. However, okay, I chose to do this at the mid-90s, which is right when the newspaper industry started tanking. So,
right, okay.
So it was kind of bad timing, but I actually put together like 48 one-panel gags and sent them off to a bunch of different syndicates. And actually, mostly you get rejection letters, but I actually got one from Universal Press Syndicate that said that you had had talent, and due to the climate, they couldn't really take me on. But it was really encouraging to hear back an actual letter that somebody handed me.
Oh, nice.
You know, yeah, giving me encouragement. So from that point on, I just kind of put comics on the back burner and focused on my graphic design career. Mm. And for about 10 years, really. And then until I encountered your show. And that
Oh, God.
Yep.
This is not when the suicide attempt happened, is it? Is this the so we're getting to now?
How did you hear about our show?
Just through Twitter. Actually, I started getting back into my comics around 2010 to 2012 time. Because my wife said, you have all these comics, why don't you put them on the internet? So I got like a WordPress site and just started throwing them up there. But I didn't know anything about marketing or any of that stuff. So it was like basically taking your artwork and sitting it out on the sidewalk. You know, it just really wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
And then I got on Twitter, and then I started making friends with other cartoonists. And then through the retweets, somebody retweeted, I think it was the show with John Cullen around episode 30, 32, or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's when I first tuned in, and I'm like, you guys opened me up to the whole world of independent comics, because I hadn't really given independent comics much thought. To me, they were like the old days where people would draw these crappy comics and put them on a copier and staple them together and they look kind of like garbage.
Yeah.
But stuff
it
you
still
were
goes on a little bit.
Yeah. The stuff you guys were introducing me to was like professional. It was like anybody can make a comic now. Like the internet opened up a whole new world that I didn't even know of.
Yeah.
And like the comics community around this show was just like so receptive and friendly and encouraging that it was like, wow, I finally found a place that, you know, people appreciate comics and they spread the love of comics.
Yeah.
And it really just developed from there. And
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, I mean, never mind us. I think the community like that's formed around this show that goes beyond what we rant about every week is the best thing, because like we've seen so many people interacting and helping each other out and stuff. That's amazing. You know, if we were gone tomorrow, which we're not going to be, but don't worry, don't panic, everyone. You know, that will still go on, and that'll just get.
I didn't really hear a big amount of panicking going on, but I'm fine with it. Yeah.
The tumbleweed.
Tumbleweed. But I mean, but because you're in the States, I mean, with this show, we're, you know, most of the time we're talking about UK stuff, or, you know, stuff around Europe or something like that. What was it like when you found out about the independent comics? Did you look to the States and see, you know, what's going on there? Because, I mean, we can only really see it digitally for the most point, week on week on things like Comixology or Comic House or wherever.
Yeah.
Because we're not seeing it in our local comic shops. But, you know, it's just exploded over the, you know, for me personally.
Yeah, before I met you guys, there were a few American cartoonists that I was friends with on Twitter, and people would share their work, but there didn't seem to be this community. I don't know if it's because of geography, like America is so huge, but the community seems to be more tight-knit in the UK, and there seems to be a lot more conventions for small press, whereas the only one that I know of in the US happens to be near me, which is the Small Press Expo in Bethesda. Otherwise, you get huge conventions like the New York Comic Con and the San Diego Comic Con and C2E2. And those, to me, are just huge Hollywood spectacle kind of
convention. Yeah. I mean, they're a bit like our MCM. We have a similar thing, and very much so. I think MCM is kind of owned by them now. But the you do get a small press area at New York, but it's not really defined. You know, there is a... like an area for I can't remember what they call it now, but you get a lot of small press people in there, but it's not really a community thing anymore.
Yeah, It seems impersonal and intimidating, and for cartoonists, at least I tend to be a lot more shy, and like going out to and putting my work into a big convention is very daunting.
Smaller
like the SPX, to me it seems like a more intimate community. You know,
I suppose you got Mocker, haven't you, as well? Mocker's a similar sort of scene, isn't it? I think.
Where does that take place? That's New York, is it?
April in New York, yeah. I think it's New York or is it Brooklyn? One of the two,
Yeah, I thought there'd be a wealth of people making their own comics. Presumably there are, but maybe there's not a community about it, or at least we know of.
Yeah, not that I know of. It just seemed like I was brought into the community in the UK more so than the American friends. Like they're friendly with me, but it's more isolated people.
It's not that no one wants to do it, is it? It's just that, like you say, there's probably that geographical, the distance. Yeah, I mean, obviously, with the internet, it's easier than it was, but it's still difficult, isn't it?
I reckon you'll probably find when you dig down, you drill down a bit more into a city, you'll probably find that there is a little bit of a community going on. Bronx Hero in the Bronx, they're a little bit of a thing, and they have the odd event. What's that city where all the hipsters live and all the indie bands go to?
Portland.
Portland. I think there's a bit of a scene in Portland as well, as I understand it.
Yeah.
But like you say, though, it's the geographical nature of the... Yeah. You know, in England, we could probably go to Edinburgh from London and we'd see a lot of the same people, you know. Yeah. We would know people at each convention because it's such a small island. But, yeah, it's interesting. I think there probably will be little pockets of it here and there, but...
Yeah, like not, in Baltimore... You might have like a drink and draw or a small group of people that get together to draw, but not really a convention per se. At least it doesn't seem like it. We have like Baltimore Comic Con, but that's more mainstream.
Yeah. Okay.
The big publishers. And they have an artist alley, but I don't think it's devoted to the indie scene.
That's very pro art collector centric, isn't it, Baltimore, I think? Is that right? I'd quite like to do Baltimore because there's a lot of, I know Cadence Comic Book Art do it and all these sort of people. They sell a lot of OA there, I think.
On that independent comic creators on Facebook, that's very Americanized. There's tons of creators on there with their own stuff. But perhaps they kind of like just a bit smaller or something. I don't know.
Or maybe their networking is just internet, I suppose.
Yeah. Potentially, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's with the States, it highlights the importance of like the independent publishers, like Action Lab, for instance, who are pretty much, are they exclusively digital? I know they used to be.
No,
but they do print now, don't they?
They started
off just, but that was very much, you know, that was an imprint like we see quite a lot over here in the UK. You know, and they're sort of by going digital, they have quite a good digital marketing presence, I think, actually now. Plus, they're doing the Puppet Master books, which makes Tony happy.
So. They're doing the Foreman books, which are obviously like Shakespeare's comics.
Oh well, it is, isn't it? You know, you can't get better than that. But I know, like, for instance, when I was in my teens, like reading Wizard magazine and stuff, I would want to make comics. I think, you know, all of us when we're kids, probably or growing up, or you want to make the comics, but it's finding out when and how, and people now that want to do it, there's a million opportunities. You know, you can just Google an article. Whereas I was looking at, for instance, Wizard. I mean, I was reading Marvel, I was reading DC. You know. In my comic book shop, there wasn't that many indie books. A few, you know. I mean, you could call Malibu Comics an indie book. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, that was as indie as it got most of the time.
But I suppose stuff like Drawn and Quarterly and Kitchen Sink and stuff like that. They were Kitchen Sink, especially, was a sort of one man band, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I suppose when you had stuff like Zap Comics and all the
but you
San
wouldn't
Francisco
necessarily
indie
see
scene.
Those like past that. I mean, obviously in London, they, you know, in like the bigger cities, they probably get more access to that sort of stuff. But as you work further afield to the smaller comic book shops that are in, like, you know, the smaller counties.
Oh yeah, there's no point in them getting them in. It was you know, they wouldn't have made any money probably.
In Wizard, I used to love when people sent in their own creations.
Yeah.
They did it like every so often, like you'd see someone send in a creation that they'd talk about. And I said, these are amazing. And I remember going through a UKCAC buying some shit like A4 comics there and thinking, oh God, these are awful. even at that age when I was fucking reading Cyberforce and shit like that.
I was hooked on Cyberforce. But Wizard...
speaking of Image, Dan, congratulations on getting the retweet from Rob.
Oh, yeah.
That
was
pretty cool.
Yeah.
Dan Butcher is legit, so this will be the last time you see Dan Butcher on this podcast because he's sold out, haven't you, Dan?
I was just getting the old letter ready to hand in tomorrow at work. I made it now, so
stick
this job up your ass.
The thing is, Dan, they can never take that away from you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That... Except many other things, but not that. Yeah.
They'll take your dignity, but that one retweet
will gone.
Yeah, that's true. Back to Wizard, though. I mean, that used to be the only sort of time I would see sort of independent American comics or stuff. But when I say independent, now we look back on them, and these are classic creators. We're talking about like Dave Sim, Jeff Smith, Tony Moore. You know, they were the ones that were sort of usually focused pretty much every month in Wizard.
Yeah.
They were always there. Whereas to go beyond that, it was more difficult, wasn't it? It was definitely it was trickier to find, and certainly how to sort of get into making comics. There was nothing. They would tell you how to draw things. I used to love those drawing sections.
Yeah.
But you know,
I've got a couple of those books.
Yeah. So in some ways, it's good. I mean, Matt, when you decided to get back into it properly, you've come back in at the right time, exactly the right time, because there's just a resource wherever you look, isn't there? So
yeah, the accessibility for anyone to make a comic, it's just really like all you need is just to do it.
Yeah.
And there's nothing stopping anybody now. The problem is making money. But
it's like democracy, isn't it? It's got its good sides, but there's a few wankers who'll take advantage of it. Do you know what I mean? I know what you mean.
As long as you're not worried about making money, you're all right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But talking about kind of making comics, so you kind
or self esteem.
Yeah. You went into making Late Nights with John Lake. Can you tell us how that kind of came around, and then how you got into actually making that comic?
Yeah, it was strange because like I said, I was putting my comics out online and really wasn't getting much action. And then I think it was like fall of 2016, like everything just hit at once. And I think some of that might have had to do with Tony. So I appreciate that, Tony.
Oh no.
Kev Brett from Nottingham Comic Con needed a single page gag strip for the Nottingham anthology. So that was really the first step into comic books that I took. And at the same time, for whatever reason, just like people online started asking me for commissions, which I never get commissions ever.
Awesome. Yeah.
And then shortly after that, I think John Late, after talking to Tony, was looking for a illustrator for a children's comic that he had in mind, and I think Tony suggested that he contact me, and for whatever reason John went ahead and said,
if I'd remembered that, because I've got a terrible memory, I would have asked Leighty for a pint of lager, Lex, last time I saw him, but I don't remember. Or at least some kind of payment in some kind.
So yeah. I don't know why he said that would be a good fit, or why you thought I'd be a good fit, because I hadn't done any sequential stuff before then, really.
We weren't wrong, mate. Both of us, neither of us were. It turned out well, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
Should be like a scout or something, because I don't know what you saw, but.
So when John came to you with like the idea, then, and you know, someone's asked you to do a sequential, straight up, like what we would call a normal comic book, shall we say? What went through your mind in terms of how am I going to do this? I haven't done this before. You know, where did you go from there?
Well, my first reaction was like, I got nothing better to do. Sure, let's make a comic. And then, he pitched his idea, and it seemed like a good fit for me, because my drawing style tends to be, I think, more kid-friendly, even though my humor style is not. But it was kind of nice to have somebody else writing for me, because, like I said, I originally got into comics and wanted to draw them, but didn't really want to write the gag strips. Yeah. Like, that's really hard, the gag every day. I got hats off to guys like Alan Henderson and, you know, other comic pros that can make a gag strip every day. It's hard to make people laugh on a daily basis.
There's loads of those comics online, and then very few of them actually, like, hit the mark.
That is the hardest thing to do. So,
I mean, I when I started, obviously, I started with this strip comic Stalkerville, and like, I only did like 120 of them. But there is a definite to do it like a landing of a joke every time. You know, whether it be I mean, sometimes I would just write it literally on the page just to get the pacing right. Thankfully, it was a very immature and very twisted book, so I could just use a dick joke or a fart joke.
Yeah. Well, I did the same with Alag the Barbarian, and we decided to do one a day for a year. And I just found that some days I just couldn't come up with fuck all. So, but some days you come up with five, don't you? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
So I was writing them, getting as many down ready in advance to send to the artist. And it was not that many of them were funny, but you know,
it was sort of a relief from the rejection letter, from the syndicates that I didn't get accepted, because it's almost more terrifying if you got the acceptance letter to have to decide. Yes. Okay, now I have to live by making a joke every day for the rest of my life. And there's actually a really good documentary on the newspaper industry comics called Stripped. I know it sounds like something from the Soho district.
Oh, but no, I've seen this one. Stripped, I believe. Isn't that the one that's got a Bill Watterson sort of poster?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's
right. I have heard of this. Yeah, I must watch this.
Yeah, you guys should check it out. It's about an hour long, maybe an hour and a half. It's called Stripped. They actually got Bill Watterson to do the artwork for the cover, and they actually got an interview. Like, he's incredibly reclusive. So he did like a small bit of audio for it, and it goes into all the history of the newspaper strip, and from the beginnings to like the current age where we're still trying to figure out things and how comics are going to go from here, because you don't have the delivery method of the newspaper anymore. Mm. So people have to go online, and I think we're still in an age where people are figuring out how to make that work to get money for it.
Yeah.
And they interview all the cartoonists, and they have the same worries that we do. It's like, oh my God, I got the job. Now, how am I going to come up with a joke every day? And there's a lot of valuable insight. So, yeah, I highly recommend checking that out.
There's some amazing comic strips. I mean, that's a whole podcast in itself. Yeah. But, when you look at, like, Dick Tracy by Chester Gould, Alex Raymond stuff, oh my God. There's, the Tarzan strips and, Buck Rogers and all this sort of thing. There's some amazing X-19. There's some of the most beautiful comic art you will see.
Yeah. And also the humor stuff when it took off. I mean, we won't see the likes of it again, I don't think. I mean, if you ask me, I'm not talking about the quality of the strips. I'm talking about what it became and then what it took off into the public consciousness and how it became a pop culture. You won't see another Garfield. What that became, because that was enormous when I was a kid. Yeah. That was collected into little books. It was collected into bigger books. You had all of the toys and stuff. It had the cartoon, which is a pretty funny cartoon. I remember that. It was really good. It had Peter Venkman's voice from the real Ghostbusters.
Class. Oh, did it? Okay. You used to get a crossover as well. So you used to get a lot of the artists would be doing both. Like Ron Smith, I know he sadly died a few weeks ago. He was doing the Judge Dredd strip, and he also did the Judge Dredd comic book strip as well, and stuff like that. And you look at, I saw a tweet, funny enough, about 5 minutes before we came on air from Barry Tomlinson, saying he wrote 6,000 episodes of Stryker and was Stryker the Mirror or the Sun or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it's incredible, 6,000. Isn't it?
Yeah. You all know this, Dan. Who are the saucy couple who are always naked in bed?
George and Lynn.
George and Lynn. Yeah. And I'm blanking on the artist, but the artist of that was fucking
blanking. Incredible.
That is the dirtiest laugh you've done in a long time, Tony.
Yeah, fuck me, that's been going since Day Dot.
Yeah. But has it? Yeah. But sometimes with them, has it, or do they just reprint some of the? When they get to the end, do they just start from the first one again?
I'm not sure.
In case none of the US listeners have heard, George and Lynn is essentially a married couple where the woman just lays around topless and they talk about stuff.
Well, they're both absolutely naked through pretty much
most of it.
It's good though.
It's
never really my cup of tea. I don't
created
believe
by Conrad Frost, appeared in the Sun in 1976 and appeared till 2010. There you go.
He just looked that up, by the way.
I have just looked that up.
He's a fountain of information, but he's not that good.
John M. Burns drew it from 76 to 82, and John M. Burns did a lot of great comics work. He's incredible, and still, I think he's still about, does some brilliant comic stuff. Yeah, really love it. The style is just beautiful. Yeah.
I will say though, Matt, like going from like those sort of panel strips to the first one in Late Nights, from page one, you'd have thought that you were doing sequentials for a long time. Get used to it.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah,
thanks.
It comes across. I mean, for one thing, you're not afraid of a background.
Yeah, there's a really great background that includes mention of us in it as well.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I can thank Google Maps for that.
I asked you about this, didn't I? Yeah.
For the
I, I wander around London all the time, and I got to tell you, it looked good, mate. It looked like London to me.
Yeah, I used the little guy on the street maps, and then I actually walked around the streets using that virtual reality to get my backgrounds. So that's how.
Nice one.
Wow. Yeah, because there's one.
You can move around the city like you're walking around.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
God, that's quite terrifying. You think about.
It's great for spying on people.
Yep.
Is it real time? Is it happening at the real time? Is that how it works?
No, that's a different website, Tony.
Go to my house. Can you see me waving out the window? Can you see me?
Yeah.
Okay. It's funny you mentioned the backgrounds, because even though they're detailed, like I always feel like I should maybe simplify my style some, because like I draw people all the time, so they're stylized. They look like my style, but I feel like anything else, I'm drawing referentially. Like I'm trying to make it look like that thing rather than how like Matt Strott would draw that thing.
Yeah.
So it's a weird blend at the moment of me copying what I see in real life and creating out of my head. And it seems to be.
I think that's perfect, though. I mean, you know, how many animes have you watched that you know everything is super detailed around it, and the people have just have a look to them, don't they? It's a lot simpler, you know.
But it's kind of like sometimes they feel like I've encountered this myself when they feel like they're two elements that don't quite sit together. Whereas some artists manage that, accomplish it where, like, even though the background's realistic, it's still within the style of the people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I think I still would like to keep a detailed background, just more my style detail.
Yeah.
Because as a kid, like, I always loved. Did you guys have like the Richard Scarry or Richard Scarry? I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Yeah.
Like the What Do People Do All Day books?
Lonely Worm, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So it'd be like a big town and you'd have tons of people doing different stuff and it'd be like all these little stories going on in that background. And as a kid, I loved to get absorbed into that elaborate background. You know, it's just like to me, it captures the kid's imagination and really creates a setting. Whereas a lot of kids' comic books today, it seems to skimp on the backgrounds.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that's shortchanging the kid. You know, I feel like as a kid, it would set a better mood to create a better background.
I feel like comics, you have to get that sweet spot between doing enough background to kind of like sell the scene of what it's supposed to be is, but not going over the top where, as much as I quite like his artwork, that Rip Juan guy who does the Avatar stuff, it's like for me, you're overworking that because you don't need that much detail to kind of...
And then also speed for production.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How long was it
There's a book we're going to be talking about later that has virtually very little detail, but describes so much with the style. It's fantastic. But
I like that one, Jose Rip, in small doses. I do like his stuff, but you're right. Sometimes it's just too much, isn't there? You know?
Yeah. I mean, it brings to mind like cover artists that you absolutely love, but their sequentials just aren't your thing. Have you ever found that where I love some covers that this person do and I think they've done a whole comic, this could be brilliant, and you open it and just think, oh, they can't really do sequentials?
No, for years
I feel that Alex Ross is a little bit like that sometimes.
Also, Kingdom Come was his best
but he's done the interior pages as if he did the covers. I can only imagine how long that took, but sometimes he goes to a more sort of sketchy version. But I know what you mean.
Also, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but the setup of the page and the panels to me feels like a somewhat different skill set or different part of your brain than creating like a cool looking image. You have to most have to approach it as a designer, like you're designing the page to tell the story. So how do the panels have to be spaced? Which is the largest panel? Like what needs to be the focal panel? And like there's all these different mechanical elements that go into creating sequential.
Yeah, the flow of reading, just reading the panels, the panel from one to another is a thing as well, isn't it?
There is
a real art form to that.
I mean, you can tell why when people say, I didn't really ever get this when I was kind of younger, when they were saying, I don't want a cover artist, I want a sequential artist. And I was like, well, they can draw well, but the storytelling ability and laying out panels so pages can be easily read and enjoyed, but also stand alone as pieces of art on their own. It's such a unique skill. And you can see why they ask for sequential artists, not cover artists, because the skills are so, so different.
And I think also with an all ages comic, it's a different level as well, because like I see some all ages comics, they seem a bit simple, but kids absolutely love them. They don't care. As long as the story's there, the storytelling's done right. You can't overwork some comics, I think, because that otherwise that is, as soon as it becomes distracting to any reader, you've kind of lost, haven't you?
Yep. It's a very deceptive skill too. Like I think we were talking about on Twitter about the Usagi Yojimbo comics.
Yeah. Oh, I love them so much. Yeah.
I was introduced from you guys, and I always dismissed that book as like simple or childlike or probably not for me because it's just too simple, but it's deceptively simple. When you pick it up and start reading it, the guy is a master of how he sets the timing up of the panels, puts in just enough detail, and then just like choosing what to show you and what not. Like, it's a kid's comic, but there's some powerful moments in that book where, you know, somebody gets killed.
Oh, really? Yeah, there really are. Yeah.
And he does it off screen, but it's more moving than if he showed the graphic violence. And like, it's just so masterfully done.
He has that shortcut of little skulls appearing above them, doesn't he? It's like this is when they've died and stuff like that. I really think he needs to get more credit because he's been putting out quality books for, 35, 40 years probably. It's amazing. They're all class. Yeah.
He does that stuff when like it's night and it's raining. There's just enough detail and stuff to kind of make the brain can fill in the gaps of like the rain coming down off roofs and these. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. So he takes out what is unnecessary. You know, there's a lot of that going on. And I like it when Simon Morton's a small press guy over here, Matt, and he goes beyond that. He strips out every single thing that you don't need that as an experienced comic reader, your eye will recognize that's a man walking across a field or, you know, that's a tree with a bird in it and stuff like that. And it's so everything is pulled back off the page and it makes it like quite a beautiful reading experience because your eye becomes acquainted to how to work a page like that. You know, really interesting when you get down to it. And, you know, Scott McCloud was a big fan of that, wasn't he?
Yeah. I guess Frank Miller did a lot of that in Sin City. He kind of took that approach. That's weird. That comic kind of like when you first start reading it, the style changes quite radically, quite quickly, where he kind of finds his feet with what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
God, that's an old comic. That's what, about 20 years old.
Are you talking about Sin City? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the entire progression of it. I wasn't aware that his style changed. So in the beginning, he really wasn't that stark black and white contrast,
It was, but he kind of like, he wasn't as sure of what he was doing.
So he's like experimenting.
It kind of like he seemed to kind of find what he was doing and then it all sort of kicked in.
Yeah, if you look at the changes that take place from Daredevil, where he was very Neil Adams inspired and all that sort of thing, you know, and the way he is now, even you look at something like Holy Terror, which was even more stripped back, you know, sort of just a real exercise in just what you can and what you can't see. You know, I really rate him still. I know he gets people are critical of his work still, but I do like that he's out there doing the sort of crazy stuff. Kirby never obeyed the rules and his artwork was fucking amazing to read. You know, I think not everything needs to be like this complete accurate physicality to work sometimes. Mm. Yeah. Although you did put an example up on Facebook, Dan, of someone who couldn't work it this way.
Yeah. I didn't send this to you, Matt, but I just sent this to Vince and Tony. It's a page by Jose Garcia Lopez.
Mate, so good.
And it's a layout and it's just absolutely like a dream layout of how you'd do a page, like a Western page. It's absolutely fantastic.
Or a nightmare if you're going to ink it.
A nightmare if you're going to ink it,
What you should do, when this episode goes out, Dan, you should, or when we post up the article for this on the Comics Talk group, etc., you should put that up there in that thread.
I just think, he is the consummate professional as well. He's the one that a lot of pros look to, Garcia Lopez, isn't he? He's the guy. Yeah. You know, he's a bit like the Alex Toth. And there were people, I met him in New York and people were queuing up, you know, big pros were queuing up just to say thanks a lot and, you know, just love your work. Because his work was used as like, he would draw characters and that would be like the Bible for a lot of characters coming into DC. But that page though, the bottom half of it is the most complicated part of it. It's basically a big gunfight, isn't it? Kind of.
Yeah.
And the bottom half of it is just like, that would frighten. I can't think of an artist out there who wouldn't be frightened about going into that.
Fucking hell, yeah.
Yeah. Because you would fuck it up somewhere. And bear in mind, that guy was doing it on Bristol boards, you know, and with pen and ink and, you know, one slip and that's fucking page is done, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think every artist should try and push themselves with every sort of page or every issue. I'm certainly experimenting with things now at the moment, like page layouts and stuff. And there's a couple of pages that terrifying is a bit of a overstatement, but they're scary to
intimidating.
Yeah, they're intimidating, but they end up being the most fun to do and the most rewarding by the end of it. Now, looking at what Late Nights issue 2, we've been privy to some of the artwork on that.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously the first one was detailed, but the second one, you've got space, giant metallic dogs in space. You know, you've got, like, space stations. Obviously, it's a very space-centric in a certain sense, this issue. But then you've got a cutaway of, like, one of the vehicles, one of those classics. I'm guessing that this spread is going to be, like, you know, detailing one of the Late Night sort of vehicles, I'm guessing. And that's one of my favourite spreads, actually.
Thanks.
It reminds me of the, you know, when you see the G.I. Joe vehicles?
Yep.
Yeah, I get you.
The Star Wars cutaway.
That's it.
Have you seen those?
Yep. Yeah, that sort of stuff. So you're not scrimping on the detail. I mean, there's huge junkyard, like, piles of salvage, etc. At any point, did you think, what have I done?
Yeah, when I first saw the script, I was like, is John trying to punish me for the first issue?
Have you met John yet, Matt?
We Skyped one time, but
it was our conversation. He always tries to draw you into that sexy Skyping. He's tried that with me.
So we talked once through Skype, but mostly it's been through email and Twitter. It's like he took this guy who did gag strips and he gave him a comic book to do. When the first one had horses and knights, and then and then the second one, he tried to up his game, having it set to space.
So I'm guessing the first issue had been published and had a bit of traction before he came to you with the ideas for issue and the script for issue two. So I'm guessing he saw what you did in issue one and thought, right, now that I know what he can do, I'm gonna really give him a test. Is that something that writers normally do, Tony?
It's an exercise in torture. There's no interest in actually getting a story out there. It's just like seeing how much piss take we can take of the eyes to get to draw something.
And then John will be posting pictures of himself out with his wife having a good time, and I'm slaving away. You bastard.
Very true.
Oh dear. But you must
the life
be
of the writer, eh?
Yeah, that's very true. Well, I mean, as writers always say, it's easy enough to just say it in one line of a sentence, but then an artist has to do an entire splash page.
Yep.
You know. But you must be very proud with how the series is going, and you're clearly having a lot of fun doing the artwork for it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's definitely fun. It is a bit daunting. I don't want to sound like I don't enjoy the comic work, because I do. It's such a commitment. And like I was talking to you guys before the show, when I got into the first one, it's like sort of born when you have nothing to do and somebody decides, hey, I'm going to make a comic. So you're like, that's great. But then the comic has to live during your life when you're trying to do everything else you do. Like I have three kids and a job. And then life crops up, you know, like somebody gets sick or, you know, all these things are thrown at you and you have to keep the comic going. So I really, you know, buckled down the first issue and managed to get it done within a year's time frame so we could have it ready for Nottingham. Mm. And it was more daunting for me when I got the second issue because, like, I knew how much work goes into making a comic. And until you actually do it, I really fully appreciate, and thank God for Ken Reynolds, who decided he was going to come on board for lettering, because originally I was going to letter it too, and by that point I was ready to shoot myself.
it's the benefit of naivety, isn't it? We all do it, you know. We always think, oh, I can do that, and then we're in the middle of it, we think, fuck me, I'm writing a comic at the moment with rhyming dialogue, and I'm like, oh God,
fuck,
I can't. I agreed to it in literally 2 seconds,
I can't wait.
30 limericks.
I wish that would be easier. Finding something to rhyme with vagina is easier than.
It'll probably just be like a sequential version of some Vanilla Ice song. That's what it'll be.
Yeah.
I did see a job today. Like they wanted 3 pages done. Sorry, 8 pages done in 3 weeks. And I was like, fucking hell.
What?
For me, that's quite a push.
Yeah. What, an indie sort of job?
Well, it's actually for Heavy Metal magazine.
Oh.
Okay.
It was paying $150 a page, And I thought, that's not bad. That's not bad.
Yeah. Well, you know,
go for it.
The amount that some people charge these days for their pages, but we won't get into that now.
We did that last week, didn't we?
Yeah. So I think while Matt's here, this is a good opportunity to sort of say this, because obviously you've just, like you say, jumped in the deep end of making comics, and you're making great sequential comics. Mm. So, but for those people who want to sort of start making comics, and they think, oh, well, you know, it's going to be easy, I'll be able to do this. What were some of the biggest learnings from that first issue that you had?
Just how much of a time constraint it takes and dedication.
Yeah.
I do everything digitally. So my office studio is in the basement of the house. So my wife got tired of me going down in the basement and never seeing from me after dinner. I would go down and draw and be down there all night. Mm. So I actually converted to a Surface Studio, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with it, not a studio, Surface Book Pro. You can draw right on the screen and you could take it with you. So that made life in the house a little better, because I think to make comics, you need a good support system around you, like a wife who's willing to, you know, help out with the kids when you can't do everything you usually would do with the kids. And she's great and does most of the work anyway, but I mean, there's times where I just have to bail and do comics to meet a deadline. And I think that is one of the biggest things, is to just realize how much time it takes and dedication, and to have a system in place. I used to get up at 5 a.m. in the morning before work and put in my time every morning for the first comic, because I worked a day job and now I'm freelance. But I used to set a schedule where I'd get up every morning, work on the comic. It's kind of a nice way to start the day, working on something fun, and you're looking forward to getting up and working on that comic, and it gets the time set away. But you having that routine, you know, having it, treating it like a job. I think that's the most important thing, is to be dedicated and set the time aside and come up with a plan that you can implement when the rest of your life gets crazy.
There's a lot to be said for working in the morning, I think. And the main part of it is that nobody's there to bother you. So if you're I'm like you, man, I used to write or try and write 5:30 to 7 in the morning. And because I know my phone ain't going to be ringing, and I know that, you know, they're not going to be interrupted by people walking by going, oh, hello, Tony, how are you? You know, it's that sort of thing, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's a good way to do it.
And then also just having a life balance, the comics are important and you have to treat it like a job to make sure you get it done. But you also have to realize it's just comics, and it's a struggle to balance, you know, that free time with your friends and your family and, you know, everything else you got to do. Hmm. And thankfully, John and Ken are the coolest guys to work for. They're very laid back. And when we were coming up on Nottingham last year, I was trying to get it done, but I just wasn't on schedule, and they talked me off the ledge because I was feeling upset about not being done this book. And he's like, man, family comes first, you know, take care of your stuff at home. The comic will always be there.
Yeah.
And besides that, having that focus, the comic's not going anywhere. Once you're done, the book will be finished and you want it to look good. So I think it's better to be a little bit behind and have work you're proud of than to try to rush it just to get the deadline done, because I don't know. It's just,
I agree.
It could be very stressful.
Yeah.
But I love it. I love working for John. I mean, he's so cool and laid back. And
be too nice about him.
He listens, so we don't want to be too nice about him.
Yeah. We've had, I have to say, I think it's a really great book, man. And I have to say, I spoke to John before issue one came out, and I said, oh, I'll put something out if it's coming out. And still one of the most read things on Never Mind Anything. It was only a shortish article, but contained quite a lot of your art and, you know, some of John's dialogue and stuff like that, and the energy of the piece. And still, in the top sort of 10 of the most read things on that blog. Oh,
it's awesome to hear.
Really, it was really good reception to it, I think. Cool. Yeah, and the second one, man, looks so good. But you're almost finished the second one, aren't you? I have one more page,
and then I can pass it off to Ken.
Yeah.
The backgrounds on those pages, you said it was all in space, so the dogs and stuff, I wanted to try to make that detailed and rich and, you know, entertaining for the kids, because in space there's not really much to draw.
They should have put that on the alien poster in space. There's not that much to draw.
Set your stories in space.
It was a bit of a challenge, and also perspective, you know, trying to get perspective in space when you don't have any reference points, because you don't have a horizon. you don't have anything to size things up against. So that was very hard to figure out how to make this dog look gigantic in comparison to the people and still be able to see the people that have the dialogue and stuff make sense. So there's a lot of different challenges in that one.
Okay.
So I'm glad you guys liked it. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Yeah,
You say you got three kids.
Yep.
Did you run any of this, your comic book work, past them?
They're like... my test subjects, yes.
How did that go down?
If they like it. If they think it's cool, then I'm pretty satisfied. My kids are into comics. I'm probably not the best parent in the world because I let them watch stuff like Futurama. And as long as they don't repeat anything Bender says, they're okay. Anyway. I took my my 6-year-old daughter. I took her yesterday to see Alita: Battle Angel.
Nice.
So,
mate, I showed my 14-year-old son Dawn of the Dead, and we got to the bit whatever the new Snyder one was, and they got to the bit where she's having the zombie baby, and he just said to me, "I can't do it, Dad, anymore. I can't watch this anymore." And I suddenly had this, like, I realised what a terrible father.
Oh, shit.
The thing is, the fact that your son was like, "I can't do this, father. I just can't."
Yeah. Like, he'd let you down.
Just so the readers, the listeners are aware, my son is not Little Lord Fauntleroy, which is clearly where you're going with that.
Father, papa! This will give me nice terrors. Jesus, when you said Dawn of the Dead, I didn't realise it was Snyder's one. Jesus.
Yeah.
I came out of the cinema after watching that with my brother, like, shell-shocked. I was kind of like, fucking hell.
Just the ending. I know that none of the men really, that they're all a bit weird endings, aren't they? But the ending of that one just, like, fucking still haunts me. Yeah. When the boat arrives.
Yeah.
Still,
yeah.
Like, you know, still to this day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And no matter what people say about his DC films or whatever, Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead is fucking brilliant, if you ask me.
Yeah, yeah,
he's good.
Good watch.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah. Anyway, what were we talking about? Kids' comics. That's what we
said. That's a good transition.
Yeah, so it's nice having them in-house to test the comics against. So if they like it, then I'm pretty satisfied that it'll be a hit with other kids.
Yeah. What kind of stuff are they reading?
My daughter... Well, one is six, so she's not really reading much, but she watches the cartoons on TV, like the Looney Tunes and Futurama. Mm. But my eldest daughter is close to 11, and like she was reading the Bones series. She liked that.
Oh, good. Oh, nice. Yeah, good choice. Yeah.
She read one of the books that I'm going to recommend later.
Oh.
And then she's into a lot of teenage fantasy novels. Like there's a Warrior Cats series, so she really liked that Scurry book. That put out.
Yeah.
She read that, both volumes of that. So she's sort of like in a fantasy genre comic book. Some comics she likes. She's kind of like picky about what she likes. I can never guess what it is, but she's into sort of the same stuff I am. So it's kind of cool.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
We want those fucking Scurry books over here.
But yeah,
the shipping is ridiculous.
Yeah.
they're not even available on like Amazon or any sort of like place like that. You can get it over here, no matter what you think of Amazon. But because I looked recently, actually, because I really want the hard copy versions, but damn it.
The shipping is a backbreaker. So apologies to anybody that I haven't backed. It's just that sometimes I just can't.
Yeah, no, completely understand, man.
Yeah.
I try to back as much as I can, but the shipping is a pain.
Yeah. You want to try living on this little island, my friend. That's more difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the beauty of the digital tier. Now, a lot of the time, I'll just back it. Because, like, it's a few pounds for the PDF, and I just think, well, I'd probably just spend that on a PDF weekly anyway, so that'd just be one of the books I get that week. You know, that's the way I think about it. Unless, of course, it's like £5 for like an 18-page comic, then...
Is it? Nah.
No.
Obviously, like, the PDF, like, it's not really costing them, apart from what they put in to make it.
Exactly.
There's no materials being used, I get to read a comic and you get a few quid for kind of not doing the great deal.
I mean, you
great
could deal, say that they're, the work that they that a person's put into it. Or,
oh yeah, that aside, if you know what I mean. Like,
I think you kind of have to separate that, surely, though, a lot of the time, don't you?
Yeah, I had a conversation. What about the price of a comic? You mean?
Yeah.
I had a conversation with that on Twitter this week, where I spotted a comic in Orbital. Anyone who follows me on Twitter, that was A5. It was 20 pages, and it was £7.
Yeah.
And I said, look, this is too much. you know, you got to be competitive. And someone said, yeah, but look how much a print would cost, and that's a single image. Now there's, you know, it's apples and, you know, it's apples and bicycles, isn't it? It's
yeah.
not.
Yeah.
You can't compare that. You can, you know, there's a lot of things that are very expensive, but yeah. don't deserve to be.
Plus, I will also, yeah. I will also say that there is a art print buying audience and there's a comic buying audience. Yes, there yeah. are people. You know, I've picked up a few prints in my time, but I don't buy a lot of prints.
Yeah, and there's an art market out there yeah. where you could probably pay a couple of million for something that size.
Yeah.
Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? For somebody or other. But, it's, you know, you've got to be competitive in the market
yeah.
to be able to sell your comic and get people. If you want people to look at it, you've got to be able to sell it for a good price, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I thought we were going to go on a rant again then, Tony. I was fully prepared to go again, but we'll save that for another day. So, obviously, Late Nights issue 2. Are all the pages done? You've got a few more pages to go on that, haven't you, I think?
I'm finishing up the coloring on yeah. the second to last page, and then I have one more page to draw completely and color, and then the art will be done.
Nice.
So, yeah, finally. I was hoping to get it out by last fall, but things kind of got away from me.
Yeah, well,
that's
right. Apologies to people waiting.
Well, look. I'm working on an issue now that people have been waiting a few years for, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, this you ain't kickstarted this one yet, have you?
No.
No, I think we're looking maybe around May to start it.
Yeah,
so we wait till it's finished, and then we'll put the Kickstarter out, so we're not disappointing people.
Which is a way to do it, my friend. There's a lot of Kickstarters I'm still waiting on. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, yep. yeah.
I like the way Dan does it, where he does a web comic, so it's there for people to enjoy, and then once he collects it all, then people will buy the book. I just with the comics,
and there is a market for that. There is, as Dan well knows, there's a market for people who want that physical copy. I personally would rather read the physical copy, although I do read the webcomic.
Me too.
Vanguard, I'd just like to have it, you know.
And if it's good, people will support it. I think. If it's good work, they'll be happy to pay a printed copy. And sort of like trying it before you buy it.
Yeah.
So
I didn't plan it that way. You know what I mean? I just kind of did a webcomic and I was like, oh, actually, this is kind of working out all right.
Yeah. And then with kids comics too, I'm kind of wondering, okay, so the first kid picks up our book last two falls ago, right? Mm. 2 autumns ago. And then it takes me a year to finish the comic. So the kid that's going to come back a year later, like eventually I'm not going to keep pace with how old the kids is, and he's going to outgrow my comic.
But so that's the eternal problem of comics, isn't it? That has always been the eternal problem. But then again, you've got to also look at it this way: is there a younger brother, or is there? Oh, you
that's
know, you'll
true.
Be selling. You'll be selling both. You'll be selling issues 1 and 2. So you're going to start doubling up on your money with the new generation. And yeah, I mean, that's always the way that we've always worried about the generational audience for something like Superman, where you know you only have 5-6 years where people would probably be of an age to be in Superman, but it does seem to carry on. It does seem to keep going.
I think that's also the advantage, and Late Nights has this. Late Nights is kind of like an episodic, it's like an animated series, isn't it? You kind of get your contained story in that issue. Mm-hmm. So there's no, it's not like you've left it. Yeah, there's a little hint to what may be coming next, you know, in a future issue at the end of issue one, but you've told a story, so it's not like people are going to be waiting like 5 years for the chapter two of the book, you know. So you got to kind of, I think that's a good way to do it if you can, to do like a story like this, especially for like you say kids comics and stuff, you know.
I like the way John has done that. It's sort of like the old Marvel way where each issue is like a self-contained thing, but it also carried on if you wanted to keep going with the series. It's a good point.
No, it's great stuff, man. I mean, how do you feel coming towards the end of issue 2 compared to how you felt at the end of issue 1?
I feel more proud.
Really?
I think it's better work than my first one.
Yeah.
Like, I tried to up my game from the first issue, and this presented a lot more challenges as far as drawing goes. And like that schematic in the centerfold that you were talking about, like, when I took that on, I was like, how am I going to do this? And then once it's done, you feel this incredible sense of accomplishment because you tried to outdo yourself from the time before. So I feel an incredible sense of accomplishment after getting it done.
Yeah.
But it was a lot harder than the first issue. So hopefully that means it's going to be a little better.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit about this before we start recording, but the issue 2, I mean, I think there's a lot of people out there who have done an issue 1 and then we haven't seen anything else.
Yep.
To do an issue 2, I think a lot, you can commend a lot of people for getting to that second issue, I think, don't you? Because it is the second album, isn't it? You know, everyone can have a successful debut album, as it were, but then you've got to follow it up.
And the ignorant bliss is past, and you know what you're getting into.
Yep.
And you know what it's going to take.
Oh, God bless the ignorant bliss. So, I mean, obviously, you know, you're sort of knee-deep in the late-night stuff. Is there anything else that you're maybe tinkering away with ideas-wise? Or not that, you know, obviously it's work in progress at the moment, but have you got a few things bubbling away that you want to try over the next year or two?
If time allows, like, I'm sure we're going to keep going with late night, so I'm not sure how long my break will be. Yeah. But I always enjoyed the Inktober stuff, and when I did Inktober that one year, I did the prawn in 60 seconds, like ash can.
Yeah.
So that was fun. Yeah. I think maybe I'd like to do another ash can in between books, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
And then,
I mean, with your style, you've certainly got the ability to do like you did for Nottingham, one and two page strips, I think.
Yeah,
people, your art really works for that as well, you know.
Yeah, there's something shorter, something self-contained,
punchy.
You know, just kind of do it with my own pace. So that'll probably be the next thing. Also, I miss the free time drawing. Like I used to do like sketches or like, you know, get the blank cover for a comic and just do something on there. So
okay.
So like I used to post a lot more of that stuff. So just the pin-up style drawings. Mm.
Yeah,
get back into some of them is like a recharge between books before we go into issue three.
Yeah. So. Are we saying erotica? You need to get back to erotica. Is that what we're saying?
Drawing some tentacles.
Oh. Right up Dan Street, pardon. But do you have like you know plans to maybe one day in the future do a convention appearance somewhere if you can? Have you thought about that?
It still scares the crap out of me. Like, this is a big step coming on here.
Yeah.
But I'm not really an outward guy. Like, I'm a kind of introvert.
Surely not. All us comics people, we're very social, aren't we?
But dude, that's the way we all started. I've got and knowing you a little bit as I do, I think you'd be fine, man. I think all you got to do is find someone to share a table who's good company, you know. The Vanders of this world, and you know, the sort of the good, solid, funny, friendly guys, you know, and just like share a table with them and get on with it, and you'll be heartwarmed by the reaction your comics get that will lead to a sort of an addiction to do it. I think, you know, I think that's how it would be.
I need my wife there. She's like the funny one, and I'm like the straight man, so she can be the entertaining salesperson, and I'll be the sidekick.
There you go.
I tell you what, we've seen that combination quite a few times at some conventions, haven't we, Tony?
Yeah, we have. I can think. I'm not naming them, but I can think of at least two right now.
Yeah.
Like me and Vince. Vince is kind of my convention wife.
Yeah.
And
look at how much he's entertained himself there.
I kept you two fed last time.
Oh, here we go. You're his mistress, Dan.
Yeah.
We're all aware of each other's existence, though, so it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
We're like polygamous, aren't we?
Yeah. Just putting on the front.
Yeah. No, I think you should definitely get into the convention game in the next couple of years, Matt, because your work would go down a storm. I mean, obviously, our lovely community is a big fan of it anyway, so, you know, we're all waiting for more Matt Strutt artwork.
Oh, thanks.
So, yeah. And we said this last week, didn't we, as well? There ain't nobody in the comics world. It's not like the rock world, like we talked about last week. There's no one's going to, like, slag you off. Everyone's pretty fucking supportive. You know, everyone's friendly. There's nobody who won't come to your table and have a chat from another table and stuff like that. You'd be surprised, man. It's all right. Mm. Yeah. It makes you sound like you're just standing there and you're literally, you know, putting yourself on show for, you know, you're like standing there naked waiting for everyone to take the piss out of you. You know, it's almost like what's the old nightmare where you turn up at the school assembly in your pajamas? You know, it's almost, people think it's like that, but it's not at all. It's standing behind a table and people chatting to you isn't like putting yourself out there like that. Not, it doesn't feel certainly like that to me anyway, you know.
No, I kind of thought it was going to be a bit like that, and it's not really. It's kind of, it's really nice. Most of the people there are pretty much on the same kind of wavelength as you.
Yeah, there's a few rolls and butters, aren't there? Do you know what I mean? There's a few.
What's that?
There's a few people.
What's rolls and butters?
Nutters.
Oh, right. I thought, for some reason, I thought Rolls was one as well. I didn't know what that would rhyme with.
I don't know. Yeah, it might be. Let's make up our own. But the but there's a few people, but usually I just sort of aim them at Vince, and he has to talk to them for 90 minutes.
I had John Tucker and his good lady wife apologise to me.
No, you did, yeah. And he got art out of it. He did you an art, a red mask.
I know. I love those guys. I love those guys.
What you do is you get opposite the man. Then when Vince gets caught talking to some nut job for 90 minutes, you just take lots of pictures of his frustrated face and then text them to him. That's how I do it.
God, I am his wife.
Mind you, I had one, didn't I? I had that guy who kept saying, picked up every book on the table and tell me what this one's about. And by the end of it, I'll make fuck off. Do you remember the bloke with the black hat and he read all the comics with leather gloves on? Do you remember him?
Yeah. I thought he walked in from like some strange mystery novel.
Yeah. He was a weirdo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we are talking about like the 1% of people we see at conventions.
Yeah.
Because normally we're the weirdos. Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
So, obviously, you're doing late nights. Are you going to do any more commissions and stuff in the future if people want to get hold of
stuff? Sure. Yeah, I'm pretty open. I don't really have any set commission rates, but the times that people have hit me up, I'm like, okay.
I don't know you. I'm terrible with rates. I never know what to charge with rates and stuff like that.
Me either.
I'm saying that quite publicly, but I'm just terrible. I feel like there's a real sort of, I feel like a sham. Do you know what I mean? That whole sort of inferiority complex thing going on.
I'm just flattered they want my artwork. Yeah. I'll pay you to take it.
Yeah. 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 There was one that I did this week of Hyperion.
That's cool.
Thank you, guys.
Do you make right over your pencils, Vince? I was watching that. Do you ink directly on the pencils or do you use a light box?
I ink directly over the pencils. Yeah. Wow. I wish I am. I only use a light box if I'm tracing.
Okay.
I don't even know what a light box is, so there you go.
Well, it's probably not what you're thinking, Tony. So I just... if I'm doing like the commissions and stuff, I'll use like a normal sort of grey-leaded sort of pencil. Whereas now with comic pages... I use blue pencil purely because then I don't have to rub out the ink and stuff like that. But
gotcha.
Yeah, that's a learning as well. I love just not having to rub out the pencil lines is just amazing. Anyway, I'm still going to mess up the inks somewhere on the page. I still know it, but I don't do that. I love seeing people's pencils artwork that's like extremely tight. I mean, Chris Imber's pages come to mind. You know, his pencils are essentially like inks. They're so tight. But me personally, I don't know. It gets to a point where my brain starts to think, you really want to ink this now. So I kind of stop doing some of the details, which probably shows in some of my pages. But that's another topic entirely.
To do this comic, I actually had to start learning how to do the pencils because when I used to draw the comics, this is a terrible habit, but like I would start by drawing the eyes on the character.
So
I didn't have any underlying artwork when I used to do my comics on the gag strips.
Yeah.
I would just start at a character's eyes and start building out, which is horrible way to draw. So like I had to actually develop a penciling technique for the comics because the gag strip method was not working. So I had to get back to the fundamentals.
There's a lot to be said for the fundamentals. I need to learn more.
Always get back to doing life drawing classes because they're so helpful.
Yeah. And some of them are quite saucy.
Yeah, if you're talking about the other ones, you're right.
Yeah. Are you still modelling in them, Tony?
Yep.
Lovely. Why is there always like a downlight on you? Anyway.
Or as I often say to Cliff Cumber, more dong.
Oh God!
That's not a reference to me and Cliff Cumber in some kind of Skyping session. No. It's the fact that we are doing a comic together.
But Matt, I think everyone should check out Late Nights.
If
they want to see, where can they get the issues? Issue one, as it currently stands. Do you know where people can get hold of that?
Printed or digital?
But either.
Lay both on us, my friend.
For printed, I would imagine contact John Late, so Level 8 Comics, I believe it is, at Twitter.
Yep.
And then if you want a digital, then I guess just contact me, Messy Comics, at Twitter.
Ah, nice.
Cool.
It's 1S, not 2. Just, yeah. I think 2 might get you porn. I don't know.
anything gets
you porn. There's a quote for his business porn, card. 2 might get you porn.
Yeah. Don't get too messy with messy. Oh. How's that?
Oh dear. But thank you for talking to us about your comic journey, Matt. He's going to stick with us for the rest of the show because he's got notes and recommendations. So he's doing better than a lot of us. But do we have any shout outs this week, gents?
Yeah, I've got a couple. So Stuart McCune, thanks, Stu. He sent me some Dylan Dogs because that's part of my stupid addictions at the moment. It's really
nice.
Dylan Dogs, very kind of him, along with his Kickstarter. Package, so the NBC Library Volume 3, City War, Desert Stories, which is another brilliant. If you've never read Stuart, then go on a Comic House and see what his style's like. It's esoteric, creepy, strange, will fuck with your head, but it's just quite entrancing. So go and have a look at that. Little shout out to Sarah Harris again this week.
Yeah.
She sent me a picture of the world's greatest comic book escapologist and Mr. Miracle in a piece of art together. Which is just brilliant. Again, Jaina Stark. But really, really nice piece of art she sent me through the post. Yeah, very cool.
Nice.
Yeah, they're my two.
I've got a couple of Kickstarters. There's loads of brilliant Kickstarters about at the moment.
God, there's a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And we don't do Kickstarter Thursday or anything at the moment. So basically because we're lazy. No. But a couple of new ones that popped onto my radar. One is by Mark Ryan, who is, I think it's Geist, on Twitter, who followed us and is a creator from Bristol. And this is Tourist, a different kind of comic. This is a Kickstarter campaign for this, which is this is the very trippy one I sent you guys earlier this week.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I really like this. Yeah, it looks great. Yeah. It's abstract, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it does seem. It's the last time I had this sort of reaction to a comic was when I first read Gareth Hopkins' work.
Yep.
I mean, because abstract comics, most of the time they're not my bag, but sometimes it can just grab you, can't it? And basically, Tourist, it says, is a comic. It's not really a comic. It's like nothing you've ever seen before. Imagine you're a space traveler touring the unknown, taking in all there is to see, then things go a bit wrong. So it's a non-traditional collection of abstract art and images that take you on a journey. Each reader's journey will be different, and I'd love you to support and join me. That's what it says on there. And immediately, as soon as I saw the page, I thought, I bet Tony would quite like this.
Yeah, I must get this. I must get. I've completely forgot I was on holiday when you sent this. Yeah. I must get on the back of this. Incidentally, speaking of Gareth, Gareth Hopkins, Petrichor, which is his new piece of art, which is, I reviewed the first part of it about 6-9 months ago, I suppose. It's amazing, and it's on up for pre-order. So if you go to @goodcomics on Twitter, you'll get a link to their big cartel, and you can pre-order it. It's beautiful stuff. Yeah, nice. Really lovely stuff.
Nice. And the other Kickstarter I'm just going to give a shout-out is from Mondo Comics. This is Andy Richman. And he's
launching... The Bath guy, isn't he?
Yep, and he's launching his Octo Brianna comic.
Oh, yes, I'm interested in this, because do you remember, like, in week 5 or something, I reviewed it was like a fake history of Octo Brianna.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
That John Short wrote. Yeah, and it's a really interesting character, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's very much, I think it's public domain character as well, I think.
Yeah, it pops up all over the place, yeah.
Yeah.
Luther Arkwright and, all different places you see her appear, yeah.
Yeah, as he
says
here.
It's a little bit saucy, as well.
Yeah, yeah. He says, cult, underground, public domain, communist superheroine. Busting out from behind the Iron Curtain in 1971, she's been storming Western comics for over 45 years. So from, like you say, Luther Arkwright to 2008, so she's been all over the shop, hasn't she?
Yeah, I think she appears in some Nemesis, I think. But Luther Arkwright also, I think she appears in the Big Finish audio play where David Tennant plays, pre-Doctor Who, David Tennant played Luther Arkwright in it as well.
Nice.
It's worth having a listen to. It's very good.
So you look for the campaign on Kickstarter, because he's already made it, because it's another one of those Kickstarters where it's pretty much done apart from some final bits, and I think it's just printing. So a nice low goal that he's already smashed, and lord knows what Lord knows what the stretch goals and stuff are going to be like. So, and Andy does great work as well. Beautiful stuff.
Yeah, so, he's a good guy. A lot of comics knowledge as well. And those guys I really enjoy chatting to. And I only really properly met him when we were sat outside Bath having a cup of tea, weren't we? Yeah. Remember? And immediately we started talking about UCACs and comic conventions. Yeah. And good guy. Yeah,
he's definitely a comics reader in the way that Tony's a comics reader. So we'll have to get him on the show. Me and Dan can go have a cup of tea and like a bit of a cuddle while those two talk about comics. any other shout outs, gents, before we introduce something a little bit extra and special?
A little bit extra. Matthew, have you got any shout outs you'd like to do? Or
hi mom, that's about it. She might be listening.
We don't have enough people say that, actually.
Yeah. No, we don't, yeah. Think of the mothers out there. Think of what they went through, having weird kids who collected comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I would say that we're everyone's mum's favourite podcast. Don't you reckon?
I would be mortified if that was the case.
We should have T-shirts with your mum's favourite podcast.
we did have a quote that is unrepeatable that Dan gave me last week that I said needs to go on a T-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we can't.
God,
do that.
Which one?
We can't say it.
No.
You know I'm about knickers.
No, right. Let's stop now and introduce.
I did do one before we came on today as well.
Yeah.
Oh, did you?
Well, don't.
With V's in the title. V's.
Yeah. Well, don't do any of that nonsense. Nah. Because now the listeners have got something special to listen to. Something a little bit extra.
Yeah.
Who gives you extra? We do.
Tony came back with more than sunburn when he went on holiday.
Not the clap.
More than you always get that in Spain. Isn't it? Yeah. More than my hilarious riff on what are these freaky, sexy Euros on about with two toilets facing each other, which one turned out to be a bidet. And probably half the people gave me a lesson on what a bidet was. Yeah. So I washed my feet in it and videoed that, which I thought was quite funny.
Yes.
So while I was there, I was looked after by Pat and Lisa Mills. And we had days of like trips out and drinking and comics talk and just like the best possible holiday. You know, if you could bottle it and sell it, this would be the best holiday you could ever have for a comics fan. And Pat and Lisa are both like great fun to be with. Like, we had the most laughs. And about 7 hours into our day out, we decided to do an interview. So excuse me, because I've got a bit of man flu in this, but we did chuckle. But what Pat does is he gives us a real big exclusive on a Anglo-French comics project, in many ways similar to Metal Hurlant, Heavy Metal. About a new project he's got going. He goes on a bit. We extend the conversation to other areas as well. But it's a really, really fun interview with Pat. And he talks about a new project, which if you're a fan of 2000D or Pat's work or Eurocomics, something like that, then it is well worth a listen. Okay, I'm here with Mr. Patrick Mills on the Costa del Crime.
Hi, Tony. Hi.
We were talking earlier about a bit of a new sort of venture, which is a French, an Anglo-French magazine. Is it called Grimm? Is that the name of it? Yeah.
Yeah, it has rather strange... It's written down rather strangely. It's G-R-Y-Y-Y-M. And... it's in the tradition of Metal Hurlant and Weird and Eerie, and it's the French definition of a magazine. It's 200 pages long, and it's crowdfunded. And I think the crowdfunding campaign starts in March.
Okay, right. Yeah, what's your part in it? So are we allowed to talk about what your story is going to be? Is that fine? Yeah, yeah, okay. So you're using some stories that you kind of had in your head for a while, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, they approached me and they said, would I like to submit some storylines for it? And they told me about some of the other people involved. They had Esteban Morotto, Michael Moorcock. I think it's a Jerry Cornelius novel or something.
Wow, okay.
So
as a text piece or is it a comic?
No, it's illustrated by some French or Spanish artist, and I think they've got a David Lloyd story in there as well. So there's a variety of people, and I like the ethic behind it. It's a group of French artists.
Could you move it a little bit forward so I can bring down the...
It's moving our table. Hang on, I'll stop this for a second.
All right, sorry about that. I got interrupted by, again, I'm in a bar with you. Every time we do an interview, I'm in a bar with you. I got interrupted by the waiter. I had to close a window to keep it, because it's so cold here on the Costa del Sol.
Yeah, right. Yeah, everyone's feeling so sympathetic towards me. So that's the publication, and I like the idea of it. And it so happens that I'm actually doing, for Read 'em and Weep, that's my text novel series, Volume 3, which is a fictional version of 2000 AD called Spacewalk. And rather than just say, well, it has similar stories to, typical science fiction stories, I felt, well, I really needed to work them out in some detail to see whether it was possible to duplicate the original success of 2000 AD. And surprise, surprise, of course it is possible. You know, it's not rocket science, really. And so I worked out a number of stories, and so I ran one of them past the guys on Grimm. And it's a story about a robot called Schlock, who introduces a series called Future Schlock, which Schlock, of course, meaning bad taste, trash, and so on, which obviously is very much what I believe in.
Loving that as well.
Yeah. I think it's the same word in France. And so I ran down some typical Schlock stories, and they loved the idea, and they said, "Yeah, we'll find an artist to illustrate it." And I was just going to run it as a text piece in my novel, but
so it'd be like the little, like you had in the first two, like little indent stories, like who is the Kanan Commando, like that sort of thing.
Exactly, similar to the Kanan Commando. This wouldn't be satirical. Okay. Schlock himself will be introducing these stories and basically satirizing some of the different things that happen. So the one they went for is a story in the tradition of these kind of space movies like Dark Star, or 2001 Space Odyssey, and Duncan Jones' Moon. You know, that kind of era that I think we all like. And so you've got these astronauts heading towards the outer reaches of the solar system, and they're being funded by product placement. And they're obviously not very happy about the fact that, you know, they're having to sort of drink Coca-Cola and eat McDonald's or something, because that's the only way they, you know, the program. And obviously one twist leads to another and so on. So it's that kind of schlock that I really wanted to go in for. Now, the reason I'm quite up on these guys is that they're going to do it in French and in English, in paper and online or digital. Cool. So I hope it works. Yeah. And I think anything that's in the tradition of Maisel Herland is to be commended, because I think we really miss that kind of dark humour. And so if they get it right, I think it'd be good.
Cool. So no idea who the artist's going to be quite yet, or?
That's why I'm quite curious, because, I mean, my God, finding an artist for a serial is impossible, but finding an artist for a one-off story is just about feasible. When I say finding it, I mean finding an artist of really high quality. So they're suggesting to me various big names that they know in France and the States, and I'm thinking, wow,
we can say, but you did hint to one earlier. If they pull that off. God, that's good.
Well, but I mean, you know, and I mean, I admire their sort of, they're really going for it, because, you know, people can only just say no. I mean, they've got Michael Moorcock on board. Yep. Who knows who they might get? And if you don't ask, you don't get.
I think, doesn't Michael Moorcock spend part of the year in Paris as well?
I think he has very strong French connections.
Right,
absolutely.
And with you here in Spain, that's brilliant. It's like a proper Euro, Anglo. That's good.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. And you're saying that they're going to drop the Kickstarter in March.
It'll be on Facebook, I think. So, you know, if anyone who does a search for Grimm, Grymym, It should come up, and it's a consortium of fairly well-known French artists who are behind it. So I really wish them well, and they said if the first issue works out well, they'll do more future schlock. And I found other outlets as well to get it illustrated, and of course, you know, I mean, it's not the reason I worked out Space Warp for Read 'Em and Weep. I did it really as part of a text narrative, but it's interesting to see if it is possible to bring back, if you like, that kind of 2000 AD in its heyday.
Yeah.
So, for example. Another story. It's a dinosaur story.
Oh, you might this one. This is my favourite one that you've told me about so far.
I've really got to write this up as a full synopsis to which I'll probably do in Storyteller as well as in Read 'Em and Weep, just really to show readers how these things are done and how they're developed. But the thing is, after Flesh, you might say, and after Jurassic Park, well, what else can you say about dinosaurs? And actually, I think it's like anything. If you put your mind to it. So briefly, the story's called The Jurassic Man, yeah. And it has something in common with The Omega Man and I Am Legend and so on. In other words, it's a guy in New York, which is pretty much deserted, following some kind of seismic split where the Jurassic era, part of the Jurassic era, has entered into New York. So you've got dinosaurs running around an empty
Brilliant.
New York.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, okay, and that raises questions. Well, what do you do with them? How are you going to make it as interesting as Flesh? And I think there's lots of ways.
Yeah,
for instance, the prime way I found was, which I hadn't really picked up on that much on Flesh, is dinosaurs, of course, are birds are their descendants. So by focusing on some of the more unpleasant customs of birds and adapting it back into dinosaurs, you have a very valid idea of what these Jurassic dinosaurs would be like. The one I'm thinking of in particular is the shrike. Now, the shrike bird puts some really large creatures on little bits of barbed wire, stabs them through, and comes along to sort of eat on later.
Yeah, okay.
So what I've got is I've got this dinosaur obviously doing that with human beings. You've got some building site with bits of rusty metal sticking up out of the concrete or something, and there's various humans. So it's very much in the tradition of Flesh. In other words,
I can see that in 2000 AD. I can almost see the eyes.
It's very 2000 AD, and obviously the Jurassic Man comes along in this deserted New York, and well, you can, and of course he's lost his family, or we think he's lost his family, but in fact, what's happened is just as the Jurassic has come into modern-day New York, part of modern-day New York has gone into the Jurassic. So you can see, if we were, I mean, my God, it could never happen, not with today's, you know, getting an artist, relying on an artist to do 12 episodes of anything is a miracle. You know, saying to him, hey, how would you like to sign on for the next 3 years? It's never going to happen. But I like the potential of seeing that there could be a future story where he discovers his family are in the Jurassic. Is he going to go back in time, or is he going to stay in New York? Lots of emotional detail. Yeah. And this, so I think that has that really has legs. And the other stories are, just as you had Mach 1 in 2000 AD, so in Space Warp you have Agent Impossible. In other words, Mach 1 was really leading off $6 Million Man, I think Agent Impossible will be leading off a little bit off Mission Impossible.
Yeah, which is relevant then and now, isn't it?
Yeah, and of course, it's even more relevant today because Mission Impossible is still running and $6 Million Man is long gone.
Yeah,
you know?
So for Jurassic Man, ideal, you can cast any artist. Who are you going to cast on that?
Oh,
who would you go for?
Well, I mean, Dream Team stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, of course, if I mean, Ramon Sola, the original, he's still around, but Ramon has retired from comics a long while. And I mean, of course, his dinosaurs would be beautiful. His buildings of New York would probably be maybe not so inspired. So you've either got a choice of you have an artist who's great at drawing New York and so-so on dinosaurs. Okay. And of course, you've also got to have the hero's got to have what? He's got to be a Punisher type, hasn't he? Yeah, he's sort of loaded down with guns, driving around in a fancy car in empty New York, etc., etc. So, trying to think, is there anyone out there? Offhand, can you think of anyone?
Well, I said this to you earlier, didn't I? I said Tim Truman would be my ideal casting.
Oh, right, yeah. Can he draws dinosaurs or likes drawing dinosaurs?
I imagine he could, yeah. I can see him doing the urban landscape, the sort of lone warrior thing.
Yeah.
I've always thought he's been a great fit for 2008. I've said it to you before.
Well, I think, you know, who knows how this thing might develop. It would develop over time and so on. But if, you know, I think by getting something like Schlock off the ground as a starter to... if things worked out at some point, I might approach him and say, hey, how would you like to do, say, an opening episode or something like that? And, you know, if things worked out well, again, further down the line, it would be a shame to work out these stories and not to get them illustrated.
Yeah, really. They all sound like proper 2000 AD fodder as well. Yeah. You know, they really do, you know.
Because that's the whole... It was really like all these stories had been kind of thwarted from 2000 AD because... There's a misplaced logic in saying, okay, we have our future cop, so we can never have another future cop like Judge Dredd, and we have our dinosaur story, so we can never have another one. But that's actually against the spirit of mainstream comics. In mainstream comics, you have a hit, so you have a break while the writer and artist are recovering, you know, from their nervous breakdowns of all those years ago working
champagne
for me.
Style.
Yeah. and then you have another similar story, you know, pressing the same button. You have another... dinosaurs are never going to be unpopular with kids. So you look for a new angle. And there's... I think there's a lot of fun, a lot of potential in that.
Interesting, because that leads on to a little bit... just a quick thing I want to ask you about as well is the storyteller blog that you're doing, which we've talked a bit on the pod recently about. And it's sort of people giving people advice about writing, editing, how to pick a hero, how to pick a villain, how to run a story. What's the aim of that?
I think a lot of how-to books always make it seem like if you follow the rules, doors will open, publishers will be ringing you up and all that kind of stuff. And it's not true. The real world is very different. And, I've come across how-to books over the years, and I thought they really do a disservice. And I think a lot of things in comics are... there's a danger of certain aspects of comics being lost forever. I seem to be last man standing on this, which is a bit scary, really. It's the knowledge of what mainstream readers look for, because it's increasingly become more avant-garde, more art house or whatever.
Yeah.
And what I represent is that mainstream thing. So, for instance, girls' comics. There are certain kind of girls' comics which, if they came out tomorrow, would be phenomenally popular. And I've done enough straw polls on this to know that that's true.
Yeah.
And ditto with... stories for boys 9 to 14 plus. So it's really to leave a record of that. So it's out there. So if anybody wanted to grasp the nettle and say, hey, I'd actually like to write for the original audience that comics were designed for, which we deserted. We've lost that audience, and it's a great, great shame, because... it's not that the audience went away, the professionals went away. Now, they will tell you otherwise, and it's complete bullshit. All this stuff about technology and, you know, changing demographics is simply not true. We deserted the readers because editors, particularly on 2000 AD in the 80s and 90s, thought that they were, quote-unquote, comics were growing up. In a certain sense, they were growing down, because it's shameful to have deserted that. And kids would write in and complain, and they would be ignored because, hey, we don't care what they think. They're just kids. Okay. They can
F off. There's an element of self-indulgence came into the writing, and then they weren't applying themselves to the reader, do you think? Or?
Just a bit. Okay. Almost, don't get me started, Tony. I will be ranting for the next hour. I won't go there.
Well, I have to say, it is a really good resource, that. I read it. Does it come out weekly, Lise? Is it? You post it?
Yeah, Yes, it does.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, yeah. Weekly it comes out, yeah. And the last one was on editing. That's the one that's just come out. Is that right?
Yes. And I think, the whole editing process, I'm trying to think. I think I gave 10 tips on editing.
Yeah, it's a great one. Really good, yeah.
Which one stood out for you? I'm trying to remember them now. Yeah. They were really...
It's been a bit of a long day of drinking, Pat.
That's true. That's true. That's a
don't
good
be a perfectionist.
Don't
right,
be a,
okay, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I think the last one was, don't be a perfectionist. I'm a perfectionist, but you shouldn't copy me because you've got you know, a family, you've got bills to pay.
Okay.
And if you're a perfectionist, which is possibly the only way to
it's
really...
It's the getting out the door stuff, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, you have to say at a certain point, it's got to go. You know, you can go on forever polishing and improving
yep.
things and so on.
Yep.
And the financial rewards are so low that you have to be realistic.
Yeah.
And so I think that was that's an important one. And then there's future things that I want to cover, which I mentioned in a forthcoming blog, like how to deal with editors and to deal with the process of rejection, which
we talked a lot about this earlier, didn't we?
Yeah. Writers and artists often have a problem with that because, you know, if they're not used to it, they're not used to getting their asses kicked, and it's a necessary process. You've got to develop a thick skin. In other words, if a script editor tears your work apart for an hour, it's not personal, not unless they're some weird editor, in which case you shouldn't have anything to do with them anyway. And there's plenty of those who are on some sick power trip. But the majority of people do genuinely, you know, want to help you, and they say, well, this story is wrong because of A, B, C, and D. And it's not personal, but it can often seem personal. And the point I made is that, you know, I can recall many writers, when I would sort of dissect their stories, would look really hurt and angry and fed up and so on. But that's the nature of the thing. It's not, if you just want to do your own stories, that's art house, that's avant-garde.
Yeah.
And mainstream is about giving the readers what they want, and the editor is, generally speaking, the best judge of that.
Okay, interesting. Cool. So where can people find this storyteller? It's on Millsverse?
Yeah, it's on Millsverse, and I think we're up to subject about 15 or 16 at the moment. So if there's an area of creative writing and also on occasion art that, you know, you're wondering, how does that actually work? You know, all the subjects are there about dealing with exposition, dealing with how you open a story, the inciting incident, the finale, and later down the line, in a few weeks' time, we'll be doing some case studies, so you can actually look at specific examples, like a schlock in particular. In other words, this is a schlock story, and you may look at it and think, well, that sounds like crap, I can do better than that. But whatever,
you're
at least it shows
it
you how
bit,
it's, how a story is presented, because a lot of people don't really know how a story should be presented.
Okay.
But I think the last and the most important bit, and the bit that will probably get me into trouble, and hey, do I care, is the selling and the financial aspects. In other words, where the money is, what little money there is, and all the tricks and the traps there. I mean, for example, people
from the other side of the table. You mean from?
Well,
they'll make you fall into these traps, sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the things like should you have an agent? And the answer is most agents are useless. And I've got friends who are. A friend is a film producer, and he said, I've never had any work through an agent, and
right,
so on. And there will be the odd exception, but none that I'm aware of. So it's things like that, and some of these, if your comic script or your novel or whatever, somebody in Hollywood wants to pick it up, the dangers, a very common thing is to try and get you to sign a shopping agreement.
Shopping. You told me about this earlier. Yeah.
Shopping agreement is where you agree to let give them the your intellectual property for a period of say 3 or 6 months. Usually with a it's self-renewing, and in return for nothing. And they will shop it around, and if they get a, find a studio or a production company who will take it on, that they'll get a finder's fee or whatever. Yeah. It's a con. And then there's another con which is very common, which is, we'll pay you to do this, but actually we won't pay you until first day of filming. Again is one to avoid. The only one that counts is money up front. The rest is crap. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and as you can see, if I can save a few poor souls from making all the mistakes that I've made, this isn't some superior wisdom. It's simply because I've been down there in the manure and experienced it for myself.
Cool. So where can people find you otherwise online? You're at Pat Mills on Twitter, is it? Is that right?
I'm turning to Lisa here, and it has been a long day, so that's my excuse. Handle.
I think it might be at Pat Mills Comics, is it? Somebody back me up here. Getting there. I'm opening up Twitter as fast as I can, and going to. It's at Pat Mills Comics on Twitter. Yeah, and we keep that pretty current, don't we?
We do indeed.
Don't you? Don't we?
And it's millsverse.com, isn't it?
Yes. Millsverse.com. Yeah. Yep. So it's worth checking out if there's some aspect of creative writing that you're you want some insights into, or if you wondered why the hell did he write A, B, or C, that you might find the answer there.
Yeah. And there's one on characters is a familiar face. I'll leave it to people to go and have a look. Here's a photograph of a familiar swinging monk on there.
Oh yes. Yes.
An old friend of ours. Yeah, leave it at that.
Yes, that's an excellent photo.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It looks as dodgy as they come. Yeah.
All right, dude. Thanks, man. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
Look at that.
How was that?
Yeah, it's good, wasn't it?
Good. Yeah. Oh, we had such a laugh. Yeah, absolutely. We had such a laugh. It was really good. And that was, that was 7 hours. The conversation continued on for a good couple of hours after that. We were sort of giggling and chuckling and mucking about. But
really good. Rosé.
And they gave me the best. I got one of those Nemesis statues that came out a couple of years ago.
Oh, nice.
Oh, so good. Yeah, one of my favourite characters and sitting on the shelf above me here. Yeah, really nice. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So there you go, folks. A little something extra for you. Don't say we don't treat you, because we always do.
Yeah.
But right now, we're going to recommend you some comics. Or what have we read that we've liked recently? I think our lovely guest should go first on this one.
That's a great idea.
Matt, what would you like to recommend to our listeners?
I actually have two recommendations, if that's all right.
Go for it.
Yeah.
All right. The first one is called The Untold Tales of Bigfoot, and it's by a comic artist named Vince Dorse. He's based out of Pittsburgh.
I've heard.
Oh, I like this guy. Yeah. You put me into him on Twitter. Yeah, I really like his work. Yeah.
He's a great guy, super nice, and his comic was 2012 Reuben winner for Best Online Long Form Comic, and it was 120 pages. It's a full graphic novel, and it's available for free on his website, but then you can also buy the collected edition for like $20. And it's a great story, I think, for both kids and adults. Like, usually all ages stuff really isn't my cup of tea when it comes to buying comics or reading comics, but his work, I think, really transcends comics for both kids and adults. It has like a classic clean art style. The colors are kind of watercolorish, and the book itself is not what you would think. Like, you would think with Untold Tales of Bigfoot that it would be like a scary monster story, but it's really a story about friendship. And I'll read the blurb on the back to give you a better taste. Scout's a carefree dog from the suburbs whose terrible hunting and tracking skills are no help whatsoever when he gets lost in the woods on a family camping trip. Alone, hungry, and far from home, Scout has to find his way back. But lurking in the forest is a mysterious beast known as Bigfoot, and he has other plans. He may be terrifying, but Bigfoot's also lonesome. Making friends is difficult when you're an 8-foot monster, so he'd like to scout to stick around. The mismatched pair may be working at cross purposes, but they team up to survive trigger-happy poachers, deadly terrain, and ferocious wildlife. And they may even solve a decades-old mystery before their journey comes to an end. So it's more of a tale of like a boy and his dog or a man and his dog. It's about friendship.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's more of a story like that. And it's just funny in parts. It's sad and a bit of a tearjerker in parts. And it teaches meaningful lessons and themes of, you know, relationships. And it's really great. My daughter enjoyed it. She plowed through it. And I enjoyed it, too. So for a 10-year-old or 48-year-old, it's entertaining reading.
Oh, amazing.
Nice one.
Nice.
It's, yeah, yeah. It's, you can find it at untoldtalesofbigfoot.com. And the author and artist is Vince Dorse.
Nice. So, cool.
That was the first one. And the second one is more of a for you guys. It's have you heard of a comic called Cosmic Scoundrels?
No.
No.
I don't so, think so, no.
So the guys who did it are Andy Soriano, who is he was the character artist on Samurai Jack, and he did work on the Mickey Mouse shorts. I don't know if you saw those on YouTube. And then Matt Chapman, who is the Homestar Runner guy, and he did some work on Gravity Falls. So Cosmic Scoundrels is like a mishmash buddy film from like the 80s. Even the logo is very 80s looking. These two guys, one's named Rochambeau, who's like this ex-military, ex-con space pirate guy, and his partner Love Savage, who's like a
what an amazing name.
He's like a former gigolo type. So they're basically going on like space hijinks, trying to heist this thing from an Imperial frigate. And it turns out the cargo they steal ends up being a baby, and just their misadventures. And they ride around on a ship called the SS Fist Puncher. It looks like a big metal fist flying through space.
On deal.
It's just like this crazy mishmash of like 80s pop culture buddy films and like hairband rock kind of tropes, and it's taken to like an absurd level. And then
I'm looking at the website now, and it looks amazing.
and then like if you go on their website, they have hyperlinks to other things besides the comic, and if you click on some of those, they'll be like their fake heist plans for their thing, and it'll have like dicks drawn on it and stuff, like as if the characters were actually writing this plan to heist this thing. And they just oddball goofy stuff, like there was a sexual marital aid called Love Me Tendril, and it was like an alien whole thing. So it seemed like something up your alley as far as
yeah that sounds like yeah,
always seemingly with the tentacle porn, Matt. I'm not sure if we're going all the way there. Are we? Is that the? I'm noting a theme. Yeah.
So those are my two recommends: one more serious and one more lighthearted.
Oh,
nah, cool.
No,
cool.
Both look absolutely brilliant and haven't been mentioned on the show before. So, yeah, definitely check those out, folks. All right, who wants to go next?
Go on, V. You go on.
Okay, here's one. It was a Kickstarter reward that I got in the post that I've had for a little while now, and I'd. This is one of those classic ones where I waited for the trade.
Right.
But I did it with the small press. This is one of the few times I've done it with the small press. It is from Maddius Comics, and it is the Tragic Tales of Horror.
Collected I reviewed edition. One of these. Yeah, very good.
Yeah. This is very much... It's created and curated by Alistair Wood, Michael Sandbrook, and Rob Jones. And it's very much their horror anthology, which, of course, they did three issues of, as well as a one-shot under the sort of same banner, called Laudanum, which we also mentioned on this show in the past before. Obviously, anthology, lots of different spooky tales, different types of things. We're talking like, you know, Lovecraftian horrors, demonic possessions, like weird tombs, you know, it's a bit of everything. I quite like it because a lot of them seem to be either set in some sort of alternate future or in the past. And it's a 20-page, well, not 20 pages, it's black and white, complete collection, and it's absolutely gorgeous. I absolutely loved it. And I normally, when we say anthologies, there's normally like a weak one in the bunch somewhere. And this is an anthology where I don't think there is.
Apart from ours.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course. Yeah. One hell of a great lineup of talent. You know, like I say, there's... I mean, I could run off the names. There's loads of them. I mean, on the cover itself, the cover's quite simple. Because of the interiors of the book, it would have been nice to have. And I saw some of the covers of the actual individual pages. They were quite built up. The cover's quite simple. It would have been nicer to have something a little more in depth. But that's just me wanting to be spoilt. Because I think as soon as you open the book, you've got nothing but quality until the very last moment. The only, purely from a designer's eye, the only minor thing is on the credits at the back. I think they needed bigger margins, but that's a proper that's a proper nerdy thing.
Such a sport, aren't you?
I am. I'm a right nerd. I'm the sort of person who walks past a banner and goes, "Oh, I recognise that font."
You're the sort of person who knows what the word kerning means.
Oh yeah, completely.
Yeah. I thought it's something that they do in the Olympics in Canada.
No. Not at all. But definitely Tragic Tales of Horror, definitely check it out. Maddius Comics, hopefully we'd like to see a bit more from them this year. I know that they don't stop putting out great comics, but you know, looking forward to seeing what's more from them. And I'd like to see more now that I've actually read it. I think if they do any new issues of this, I'm going to pick up the individual issues as well. So it's done its job on me. Thank you very much.
There you go.
So there you go. Who's next?
Shall I go next? So I know the one that Dan's doing, we probably might all voice an opinion on, aren't we? So,
yeah.
I picked up something. I did the random buy a comic at Orbital from the small press shelf this week. And I found a creator who I'd not previously read. Endswell, issue one, The Family Photo. And it's by Peter Morey. £3, black and white, A5. Nice cardstock. Good value. Nice little comic book. I'm going to read you from the inside. It says, as of September 2018... This is chapter one of a work in progress. It is a dramatisation based loosely on real events. The narrator is untrustworthy. It is a highly subjective account and feedback welcome. And that immediately, when I read that, I thought, right, this is not going to be one of those tiresome autobiographical comics that usually I rant about how boring they are. And I just love the fact that the narrator is untrustworthy. I just like the fact he's put that in there. Peter draws himself and he basically, like you say, is brilliantly subjective, and he goes to a local health centre and meets a counsellor. And you get the feeling that he's been going to this counsellor for a while, and this time the subject they go and talk about is family. So he tells the story to this this sort of lone counsellor sitting there in a chair, a bit like Ronnie Corbett. He looks like a sort of counsellor version of Ronnie Corbett sitting there, about a man who chatted up his gran at a local garage. She gave him a lift home, and then he moved in with her and never left. And it tells it with real sort of warmth and humour. It's a really nicely told story. And he tells this, the bit where the bloke chats his, the granny fucker chats his granny up, just like made me laugh so much. It's just got this sort of real twist to it, you know, really clever. The dialogue's great, really, really good. And he speaks, what he does is he encapsulates the character, or he clarifies the characters in the book by what they say in a very few sentences, which I think is always a good style of art when you're writing dialogue in a comic. It's got the artwork has got a sort of comedy caricature indie UK feel without making it sort of too slapstick, or you know, people fall into that manga trap, don't they, sometimes. It has none of that. Something akin to maybe Alex Potts, who we saw out of Avery Hill. He's put a few books out. There's that sort of comedy, just sort of laid back comedy to it. It's not sort of overplayed at any points. And he's got a sense of sort of familiar mockery of the characters. I'm going to put it that way. They're very sort of warmly exaggerated. And they do form into a sort of funny stereotype, but he does it with a little wink, and it does it with a sort of sensitive way. Really good. I laughed. A couple of the sort of sections, and it really breaks out well. The price is good. I would say there's a couple of pages into the second act, to sort of the second half of it, really, that he crams a little bit too much into a page. Okay. Maybe just consider some of the panel pacing that goes on. But mostly it's quite a breeze of a read. It's most of it, the majority of it, is lovely pacing. And it isn't just these couple of pages where he talks about something that's happened in history, sort of thing, something that's previously happened. I'll certainly be looking more for him. He's a creator out of Wembley. It knows me, knows that Wembley's close to my heart. The best thing I can say is it reads like a good BBC Three comedy. Does that make sense? Sort of indie comedy.
Yeah. Okay.
It's got that sort of little sense to it. I found it very, very refreshing. He's part of that Whip Comics group that started gathering at, I think they gather at the Festival Hall, Royal Festival Hall on the South Bank. It's like a new monthly meetup for comic creators, work in progress comics, I think they're called, something like that. I must look more into that.
Yeah, look, that's just down the road from me. So,
I think, you know, up on the upper level, there's like a bar area. I've got a feeling that's where they meet. I think so. Go to Peter Morey Sketches. Peter, then Morey Sketches is on the old IG. You know, obviously everybody knows I'm very popular on the old IG. or if you go to petermorey.com, I've had a look at that today, and there's loads of stuff there for sale. And it's all quality stuff, all lovely sort of black and white art. Very much in the sort of El Kafkosh Comics kind of feel to it. But don't let that put you off. And it certainly never puts me off. But don't let that put you off that it's a bit arty. It's not. It's like friendly. What was the book about the dog? The Man's Best Friend. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
By the Rickard sisters. It's got a feeling of that sort of nice feeling to it. And I think, genuinely think people will like it. And for £3, you can't go wrong. So that is my one.
There you nice. Go. Take it away, Dan.
This is a book that Tony bought me and Vince at Troops and only got around to, I only read it this week. And it's Kingdom by John McNaught.
Oh,
and
it's so good.
It's amazing. It's honestly, in January, I feel like talking about like my book of the year so far. It's brilliant. I'll read out the blurb on the website. A family sets off for a long weekend at a caravan to a caravan park on the British coast. We follow them through their familiar landscapes of summer holidays, motorway service stations, windswept cliffs, dilapidated museums, and tourist gift shops. In this atmosphere and competitive work, John McNaught explores the rhythms of nature, the passing of time, and the beauty and boredom of a summer holiday. And that encapsulates it. It's just so well done. It sort of like pulls out moments where like they go for a service station. And if you've ever kind of done that on your way to kind of like a seaside holiday in here in the UK, it just gets everything so right. The observations and the timing and the pacing. What did you guys get from it?
Yeah, I have to say it's a very simple story, but it's told so touchingly, isn't it? It's told real, real heart. And the way, I mean, I think we talked about this before, but there's 36 panels on some of those pages.
Yeah.
You know, and there's sometimes there are only little changes about things that they're observing. I think they go to like an arcade in the services and stuff like that. There's a little sequence like that. And but I always mention because I could sell this book to aliens who've never been to the seaside and don't speak English because it's so good. But the page I always show people when I'm selling it for no brow is the reflections in the water. There's a big rainstorm, isn't there? And the following morning you get that sort of peaceful period after the rainstorm, and the daughter of the family goes out to sort of trudge back through the puddles. And I'm flabbergasted with the art. It's just so beautiful. And it's got that sort of faux woodcut, lino cut kind of look to it.
I would never thought I'd ever say that I want a page of art that on my wall that's traffic.
There's a page
of just the motorway scene, traveling on the motorway, and it's just beautiful, absolutely stunning.
And it's just so peaceful. But and like the bit where he meets the kid by the seaside, you know, there's always that sort of annoying, slightly dangerous kid you knew you didn't really want to speak to, and then you go kind of get caught up in walking around with him, you know. And it's just so spot on about what it's like.
I mentioned before we came on the show, there's a bit where the mum's taking her daughter and son to like where she used to go on holiday. And she talks about like this mermaid's cave that she always was full of wonder. And her and the daughter go and find it. And she's kind of like, oh, it kind of the rose tinted lenses have come off and she sees it. What it is, it's just like a big cave full of crap. But her daughter absolutely sees it with the same eyes that she did when she was a girl and finds it like a wondrous place. And she's like, oh, look, Mum, I found this, I found that. And it's all little trinkets and crap that's washed up. But like just that little observation of sort of seeing this kind of flip of the kids seeing it and then the mother seeing it, it's so well done.
Yeah. And there is a social conscience to it to a certain extent as well, because she's sort of a single mother, isn't she?
Yeah.
Trying to keep kids occupied, and the boy's beginning to go off the rails a little bit, and you see the cracks that are appearing, and she's sort of frustrated and snappy at them in, well, you know, when they're trying to get to the place on the motorway and the services and stuff. And it's very true feeling. Yeah. I know, I mean, everyone loves John's art. John, and John, we were talking about it before, John's done the poster for LCAF this year. And they've just released it, I think, last couple of days. Looks lovely. But I know, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn. I know they're planning to release, because a lot of his books are out of print. Nobrow put, I think, 3 previous books out and some prints and stuff. And they're about to sort of collect them all in one go. And that will sell like hotcakes. Mm-hmm. The amount of people who said to me, oh, is this available? Is that available from him? I'm saying, oh, I'm afraid they're sold out at the moment. But yeah, beautiful stuff. Amazing stuff.
Yeah, I'd honestly recommend go and get this book. It is fantastic. It's really good.
Yeah,
definitely.
And thank you for getting it for me, Tony.
Pleasure, man. Always like to give you a little present, don't I?
Yeah, absolutely. Pleasure to read.
Behind the scenes, we're nice to each other, but we just don't know.
Yeah.
Right. I've got a couple of prezzies to give to you guys, actually, when I see you next.
Oh, my God.
Oh, okay.
Is it the left one and the right one? What?
They're comic presents, so don't worry.
Okay. Thank God. anyway, on
Chelsea
that,
Smiler.
On that filth. We've got what a show it's been this week.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah. Got a lot of show notes and even more editing to do. but it's been fantastic.
And thanks to everyone for last week's comments. We had an absolute. It was just like a roll around with James. It was the best time, wasn't it? It was not this week hasn't been brilliant as well, Matt. Just in a slightly different way. Less C bombs this week. I'm not saying.
It's tough act to follow.
Yes, but it speaks volumes to our audience that a lot of people then went out and checked out a lot of James's work. So that's brilliant.
As you should with Matt and John's work as well.
That's what you should do to all of our guests, and I'm sure you do anyway, because you're all lovely people. And thank you very much for listening this week. If you want to get in touch with us about anything we've spoken about on this show. We didn't really go controversial this week, but I'm sure we will one day. We've got to really bait them into sending some emails, don't we? No, we don't. We're not that. We're not clickbait. We're just good old comic fun. So, God, I sound like one of Reeves and Mortimer then. Wasn't that a lot of fun? now, you can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we'll be announcing future guests and some exciting stuff coming up. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And like I say, we've been talking about this community, and quite a lot of them go on Facebook and join the group Awesome Comics Talk. And there they have some fantastic conversations about conventions, artwork, comics in general, this show. So definitely join there if you do that social networking. If you just listen to us on a website, thank you for doing that. Whether it be awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you want to listen to us on iTunes, then subscribe, leave a review. Just shout our name at the top of your lungs so that more people listen to the show. When it goes oddly quiet during this bit, I always get a little bit nervous.
So I was muting it because I had a cough. I wasn't not encouraging you. Keep going. You're doing well.
All right. Thanks,
You've
babe.
Not hit the partridge. You've not hit the partridge yet. It's going well.
Thanks, babes. Thanks. right. And then thank you for listening, whether it was on Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod Kangaroo Apples.
damn it. I was trying to hold it together. But the imagery. Oh, God, the imagery.
Yeah. The things I Google for this show.
Yeah. Oh, God. Your browser history must be like the Battle of the Somme. Anyway.
With more deaths.
Oh, God. Where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
S-E-S-E-Z-O-H-Y-Z. And please go to Amazon and or Waterstones or wherever you buy your good comics and buy a copy of Making Comics with Springworth by myself and Mr. Hanks. Now, Mr. Hanks and I are working on something new, and he's been sending me some sketches, and it's going to be fucking brilliant. Yeah.
Yes.
So please go and buy this, because it is a good cause as well. It's good, good for kids.
Yes, absolutely. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard @VanguardComic.com.
Very laid back this week, my friend.
Yeah. I've been posting up the weekly videos. Got another one tomorrow. Got a nice little
humorous. These are my favourite things. I love
humorous angle at the start. You'll like it.
I mean,
I like drinking tea. still does me. Yeah. Still gets me.
I like the one where he was just drawing something on a pad, but there wasn't anything there, and then he threw the clipboard over his shoulder. In all seriousness, though, Dan's Patreon videos are well worth it and very insightful if you want to know more about Vanguard itself, so definitely check that out. You can find you can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can find me on Instagram there as well. I think I might try and post some more some of those hyperlapse videos of me just absolutely.
Oh well, yeah, that's good.
Oh, thanks, dude. Yeah. But yeah, you can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. And yes, as I posted online today, the pages have started for issue four. Yep. Yes.
Yes.
Stay tuned as I'll probably tell you how I've done nothing next week and I'm shit. But
and you got to fit them in with the summer special that we're doing as well.
Will you stop calling it the summer special? Stop this! Just stop this!
You're gonna give me heart failure.
Yeah, look what you're doing to Dan. Look at him. Anyway, but our lovely guest this week has been Matt Strott. Thank you very much for joining us this week.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, cheers, Matt. Star.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah.
So, like the stray cat that's been hanging around the house, and you guys fed me, and now I'm never going to go away.
Yeah. We didn't get a chance to bitch about that shitty G.I. Joe comic.
Yeah, but we kept it pretty civil and salt-free. Yeah.
But where can people find you online, etc.?
I'm mostly on Twitter at Messy Comics. I'm also on Instagram at Messy Comics. And if you want to see any of my gag strips, which is the Last Resort, and some of my college stuff, it's on messycomics.com.
There you go.
It's one S.
They're worth
one
a chuckle. One S.
One S. One S.
You might get you born.
I would name the episode that, but I don't think that's a good idea.
But anyway, we'll do anything for hits.
Yes, that's true. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. Hope you have a great week. Read loads of comics. And from Matt, Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. And as always, what do they do, Dan?
Stay awesome.
Back of the net.
Yes, good one.